started.
Okay, good evening. My apologies for a slight technical glitch there. My name is Paula Reed, Mayor of Kingborough, and it is my pleasure to welcome everybody here to tonight's council meeting on Monday the 4th of April 2022. We have temporarily gone back online, as you can all clearly see, as we've been impacted by COVID and so have a number of our staff. So to everybody who's watching along at home on YouTube, a warm welcome to you this evening as well. It is now 5:36 p.m. and I officially declare this meeting open. I wish to advise that council meetings are recorded and made publicly available on our website, and in accordance with council's policy, I will ask the Acting General Manager to confirm that the audio recording has started.
The recording has started.
Thank you. I wish to acknowledge the traditional custodians of this land, pay respects to elders past and present, and acknowledge today's Tasmanian Aboriginal community. Our attendees this evening are myself, Councillor Reed, Deputy Mayor, Councillor Westwood, Councillor Bastone, Councillor Cordova, Councillor Fox, Councillor Gladewright, Councillor Midgley and Councillor Street. From our staff this evening, we have the Acting General Manager, Dr. Stevenson, the Acting Director of Governance, Recreation and Property Services, Mr. Basham, our Manager of Works, Mr. Johnson, our Program Manager for Transform Kingston, Mr. Kaymet Soglu, our NAB coordinator, Ms. Quinn, our media and communications advisor, Ms. Adams, and our executive assistant, Ms. Morton. We have apologies from Councillor Grace and Councillor Watts. Application of minutes. The motion is that the minutes of the open session of Council Meeting Number 5, held on the 21st of March 2022, be confirmed as a true record. I'm looking for a mover and a seconder, please. I have a mover in Councillor Fox and a seconder in Councillor Gladewright. All those in favour?
Aye.
Okay. Motion is carried unanimously. Still on page one, workshops held since the last council meeting. We had a workshop on the 23rd of March, which was a half-day budget workshop, and we also had last Monday evening a workshop on the 28th of March, significant trees, and also a budget workshop. Turning now to page two, declarations of interest. Does any councillor have a declaration of interest that they'd like to share? No? Thank you very much. Transfer of agenda items. Is there any item on the agenda that councillors would like to transfer from open into closed session? No, thank you. There are no questions without notice from the public this evening, as the meeting is being held online. Questions on notice from the public, and if you do wish to submit a question on notice, you can do so by sending it through to us via email at kc@kingborough.tas.gov.au. We had one question on notice. It was from Mr. Ross Kyle. It was an application to vary a condition for DA 2014-304 with an officer's response from Ms. Tyler Moore. Turning now to questions without notice from councillors. Does any councillor have a question without notice? Councillor Gladewright and then Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor. I'm aware that the mayors of Greater Hobart met recently and there was some discussion about ferry terminals. I know that some community members are interested to hear about a proposal for a ferry, if there is any ferry terminal here in Kingborough. And I think Margate has been floated as potentially the best option, but I was just wondering if you could let us know some more details about that.
So as part of the Hobart City deal, the mayors meet regularly, so that's the mayors of Glenorchy, Hobart, Clarence and ourselves. As part of that, we put in a joint submission to all candidates in the federal election for some of the priorities that would relate to the city deal, where we believe that the federal government could provide some funding. While we did indicate within a number of priorities that we were hoping to extend the ferry network, at the moment those priorities for that election bid were confined to those areas where there was in the opinion of a range of people, existing infrastructure that could be easily utilised for ferries. I believe the difficulty, for example, of Margate is the use of the existing facilities, but also the location of it in terms of where the ferries would have to come around. So what we put forward was actually just a starting point for the discussion. What we really want to do is now bring the state government on board to have a proper look at a comprehensive ferry service. And there's no doubt that Kingborough should be considered as part of that. I believe it would be a great thing to be able to travel by ferry to work rather than travelling up the southern outlet, and that many people of Kingborough would probably share that. One of the challenges, though, is having those ferry services in a location where there can also be parking, and that's the challenge. So it's I guess, the question of the infrastructure, the route that the ferries would take to be the quickest, because that's a consideration for any ferry operators, but also then where do people park to get to the ferry, or what are their public transport options to get to the ferry. I know that there is a bit of concern over on the Eastern Shore about sections of Belrive and streets around Belrive being clogged up as people do a bit of a park and ride for the ferry. Ultimately, of course, what we want is people to be able to get public transport there to connect with the ferry to then, you know, so that cars are taken out of the equation. So there's a number of factors. In one of our upcoming, the Greater Hobart Mayors meet monthly, and in one of our upcoming meetings we do have on the agenda to talk to people like Bob Clifford, who obviously has operated a ferry service for Tasmanians before quite successfully. He's got some opinions on that, what the future of ferries might look like, because there is possible that there will be electric ferries in the future. So I'm quite excited about it, provided we can get all the options and all the ducks in a row, so to speak. But whilst it didn't come into this initial lot that we put forward, it's certainly not off the agenda by any means, as something that I am very keen to see, and I can see from the nodding around the table that many of the councillors are as well.
Thank you very much.
Councillor Cordover and then Councillor Bastone.
Thank you, Mayor. I have two questions. My first question is about the gun dealership soon to be operating next to Margate Primary School. So in today's Mercury newspaper, in an article by Kenji Sato, there were reporting concern about a gun dealer operating from next door to Margate Primary School. And the final paragraph of that Mercury article in today's newspaper reads that gun dealers need approval for a licence, but they do not need approval from their local council to set up business. End quote. So firstly, is that true, that council has no involvement in people dealing guns in our municipality? And secondly, does council have an official position on whether or not it is appropriate, in our opinion, for firearms dealers to be operating next to primary schools in our municipality?
Personally, I don't believe it's appropriate for a gun dealer or a firearms licensed dealer to operate directly next door to a primary school. There are tests when licences are put out about whether it's in the community interest for, say, gaming or liquor, and there are restrictions around the location next to primary schools and childcare centres and other areas that might be in the public interest. I don't believe it's in the public interest in this regard. The situation with this particular application was that there is a retail premises operating at that location. It's the old church in Margate next to the primary school. They had a retail licence, and it doesn't matter whether it's retail in the traditional sense that we might consider, as in selling groceries or food or shoes or something else. That is exactly the same as retailing guns, apparently, according to the planning laws. And so there was no change of use required. I find that quite unbelievable. I did write last week to the Minister for Police, Fire and Emergency Management, asking that in this case that the Commissioner for Police review the licence being provided for that premises, because the school community is very concerned about it. I've also asked that the legislation surrounding the granting of these permits be changed to have consultation with councils, but also to specify that locations adjacent to schools are not appropriate. I don't understand why it would apply for liquor licensing and gaming, but not for firearms. So I did receive a response from the Minister today. It was not a satisfactory response. It did not answer those the points that I put forward, so I'll be seeking some further clarification.
Thank you, Mayor. That's a really helpful response. And my follow-up question was going to be about how we lodge our official opposition or our register our complaint, but it seems like you've actioned that already, and I look forward to, you know, hearing what comes back when you persist with this matter, because I think it really is important. So thank you for that, Mayor. My second question relates to the General Manager's diary. So the two things I was interested in were, firstly, on the 9th of March, the meeting with the representatives from the Callis Group to see if there was any information regarding Margate. And then the second question I had was about Zen City, and just I assume that that meeting was part of the Kingston CBD Transform Kingston CBD project, but I just wondered whether there was anything else worth reporting from that meeting. So the two items are the Callis Group meeting and the Zen City meeting.
Thank you. I'll ask the Acting General Manager to answer that. She is not actually on a tropical beach. That is just a screensaver behind her, but it does look very nice. Dr. Stevenson.
Thank you. Through you, Mayor. I'll start with the Zen City one. That was one of the senior managers was in Tasmania. Zen City, we have a relationship with them to support our communications and engagement work in a range of ways, and they were taking the opportunity to inform us of some new parts of their service, including that they have recently acquired a citizen engagement platform that we will look at how we might be able to utilise here, and can provide us some strategic advice in terms of reviewing some of our tools. So it was a stakeholder relationship meeting. My advice from the General Manager regarding the meeting with the Callis Group was to further the discussions around their plans for Margate, and this week I reached out to Mr. Bygrave, who works for the Callis Group, to invite them to formally submit any requests they would like Council to consider in relation to moving that development forward.
Thank you for those answers. And through you, Mayor, I'd just like to reiterate how important it is that we get some action there. People have waited far too long, so it should be a use-it-or-lose-it kind of approach, but I'll leave that for another day. Thank you, Mayor. That's all for me.
I've now got Councillor Bastone.
Thank you, Mayor. My question relates to the Woodbridge Hall. The Woodbridge Hall is approved to have 85 seated patrons, but it only has 65 chairs, and an application to the Council to supply an additional 20 chairs was met with you need to apply for a community grant. Seeing that the hall is a Council asset, I'm wondering why the community needs to go through the whole rigmarole of applying for a grant to get the 20 chairs for what is a Council asset.
Thank you, Councillor Bastone. I'm just looking along our list of staff. Dr. Stevenson, could you assist us with that?
I'm afraid we'll have to take that one on notice with Mr. Smee on leave at the moment.
Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Bastone. Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. I have a question in regards to the Kingston Bypass duplication and Algona Road roundabout upgrade. Noting that consultation occurred in December, I'm wondering if we have any updates in regards to that.
Dr. Stevenson?
Through you, Mayor. I don't believe that Mr. Johnson will have the answer to this one either, so we'll take it on notice.
Thank you.
Our apologies. As I mentioned earlier, we have been impacted by COVID in quite a few ways for this meeting, so a number of our staff are not with us as they normally would be and be able to answer that. So, apologies. Any further questions without notice? No, if not, we will move on. Thank you. There were no questions on notice from councillors, so we turn now to page 3. Petitions still being actioned. There's a report on a petition headed upgrade to car park, Taruna Bowls and Community Club, and that will be provided at a future council meeting. Still on page 3, petitions received in the last period at the time the agenda was compiled, no petitions were received. We now move to officers' reports to council. Kingston Main Street design options with a recommendation on page 8. I'm looking for a mover and a seconder, please. A mover in Councillor Street and a seconder in Councillor Gladewright. Councillor Street.
Thank you, Mayor. I'm very pleased to move the recommended motion and take another step towards what's an incredibly important project for Kingborough and an incredibly important project for Kingston as well. As many would be aware, as part of the Hobart City deal, Kingborough Council was given significant funding to the value of $7.9 million for the purposes of contemporising our CBD and Main Street. As part of that, we engaged a project officer specifically for the project, and the outcome of much consultation and design work has been the recommendation that's before council tonight. It is, as is always the case, a compromise between the needs of many different parts of our community and many different users of our CBD and our Main Street through Kingston. But Mayor, I think it strikes the right balance. Mr. Kaimatsoglu and the rest of council staff are to be congratulated for all the work that has gone into this, notwithstanding the fact that there is a lot more work to go to get this project to fruition. And I should note as well that there's a lot more work, in my view, for councillors and council to do in terms of the contemporary policy setting and direction that needs to take place to turn the hard infrastructure works that much of this project and what we're looking at tonight relates to into the contemporary CBD that Kingborough deserves and the contemporary CBD that Kingston needs. So the hard infrastructure is that we're looking at tonight, in my view, is just one part and will be worth little unless councillors and council now work really hard, hopefully tonight, after we adopt this recommendation and design plan to make sure that our policies and direction are set so that we make the most of the money that we're spending on these works. I look forward to hearing the debate around the table this evening, or the virtual table this evening, and I commend the motion to council.
Thank you, Councillor Street. I keep muting myself because my cat keeps meowing. I think I have Councillor Cordova, then Gladewright, then Fox, then Bastone. So hopefully I've got that right. So Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor, and sorry to jump in before the seconder of the motion. I think this is a really important project, and it is signals that, quite rightly, as Councillor Street says, the next step in what is crucially important for the whole municipality, but of course for our CBD, and also it will have important impacts on the rest of Greater Hobart, because as we know, that's part of the city deal in the first place, was to reduce congestion, and it's part of a broader vision. So I think it's really important that we note the survey that's taken place, in which there were some 742 responses from the general public, as well as 14 responses from business sector stakeholders. Now, there are various options that are contained within the report, and then there's the officer's recommendation. And so I thought it would be useful at this stage, early on in the debate, to ask a few questions, just for those who aren't you know, who don't have the report in front of them, if we could hear perhaps from Mr. Koglotz.
Taylor Blue.
Forgive me. If we could hear about the various options. So my understanding, as you can see in the report from page 6, we've got option 1 with some street parking, option 2 where there's not that level of street parking, and then we've got a hybrid model, option 3, which basically... you can see it on attachment E. It involves the construction of option 1 as an interim solution with the conversion of the southbound lane on street parking to outdoor dining and public open space at a later date. So if we could please hear what are the main differences between those three options and how we came to those options.
Mr. Clements, I'll blue.
Through you, Mayor. Thank you for your question, Councillor Cordova. The main differences between the options, as you said, revolve around the parking. So option 1, which is the recommendation, is to have an uphill painted cycle lane, which is 1.9 metres wide, which is wider than the Australian standards. It includes a 400mm wide buffer zone to alleviate the chances of cyclists getting doored from people leaving their parked vehicles. The cycle lane then continues on past the outside of the bus stop, which is adjacent to the Commonwealth Bank, and then links up with the existing on-road cycle lane at the traffic signals near Banjos, which continues through to the southern parts of Kingborough. So the option 1 has 10 on-street parking spaces outside the existing restaurants on the southern side of the Channel Highways. And then it also has another 10 parking spaces created on the northern side of the road, which are now available due to the relocation of the bus stop to number 40 Channel Highway. So that's basically option 1. Now, listening to the feedback from the community and from stakeholder groups, there is a desire for separation between motorists and cyclists. So, but also listening to the feedback from our business community, the plan would be to have a staged approach where option 1 is, as I mentioned, currently we have the 10 parking spaces outside the restaurants. 3 of the restaurants have only been open for a period of around about 6 months. So obviously they are relying on all sorts of generation of income from foot traffic and parking, etc. However, as we see Kingston grow, and definitely central Kingston, we see that there's going to be a lot more foot traffic and a lot more people living within central Kingston, which means those businesses, as the project evolves and as Kingston evolves, there'll be a lot more foot traffic and those businesses won't be as reliant on the parking down the track. Therefore, it gives us an opportunity to repurpose those 10 parking spaces on the southern side of the road to on-street dining and to public space. Could be artwork, could be street furniture, seating, water fountains, etc., that kind of thing. And then we can put a buffer on the outside of the existing painted bike lane, which will then create that separation at least through that first bit of Channel Highway, so from the Hutchins Street roundabout, which is in place at the moment, through to the Channel Court entry exit, and then the on-road bike lane will continue on the outside of the buses. So it allows the business to flourish for the moment, but also with a second stage approach to give us that extra protection for cyclists in the future. So that's the option 1 and recommendation. Option 2 removes all parking on the southern side of the street from the outset. So you'd have a 3 metre wide, or a little bit over 3 metre wide footpath. Then you'd have a 1.8 metre wide protected cycle lane against the curb, and then there'll be a buffer, an island with some vegetation, which will give protection between the cyclists and the vehicles. Cycle lane then continues through the entry and exit to Channel Court and then continues on the inside of the bus stop. So what happens there is the cycle lane will ramp up to footpath level and become a shared space. It'll be still a dedicated cycle lane. However, the cyclists would have to yield and give way to passengers exiting and entering the bus. And then once the cycle lane gets past the bus stop, it ramps back down to road level and then links back up to the existing painted on-road cycle lane outside of Banjos. Through that particular section near the bus stop, the council is looking to put the new bus shelter set back from the existing footpath, which will give us a 3 metre clear space of footpath for pedestrians who are not catching the bus, or just accessing the street up and down Channel Court, Channel Highway. And then you'll have around about a 1 to 1.2 metre bike lane through that particular section, and then another 1 to 1.2 metre landing for passengers to step on and off the bus. So they're not actually stepping into the cycle lane directly, which is very important for accessibility issues and obviously trying to alleviate any kind of conflict between cyclists and pedestrians, which is, obviously we don't want to increase the amount of conflict between user groups. So that's what happens through that particular section. So on the other side of the road, everything is as per the original option. So the bus relocation to Channel 40 Channel Highway, the in and out of John Street becomes left in, left out only to make it a lot safer for pedestrians and for traffic calming reasons, and then the new parking on the northern side of the road. So the main difference between option one and option two is the fact that option two removes all parking from the onset, and it has the cycle lane going on the inside of the bus. This is a treatment that's used around multiple cities around the world, and is also known as a floating bus stop. So then moving forward, after additional consultation with businesses and other stakeholders, including the cycling groups, an option three was created, which is a hybrid of both options. So basically, in a nutshell, from Hutchin Street through to the Channel Court entry and exit is exactly the same as option one. So we've got on-street parking, an on-street painted cycle lane to be converted to a separated cycle lane down the track when the on-street dining is created at whatever date is chosen. And then once we get past the Channel Court entry and exit, we can then divert the cycle lane onto the inside of the bus stop and create that floating bus stop arrangement that I mentioned in option two. So option three is, option one with the parking to be removed at a later date, and then the floating bus stop treatment outside where the Commonwealth Bank is at the moment.
Thank you.
I think that's clear.
It's a big help. The way that I see it, I think it's important that we recognise that the majority of the general public did actually want to remove that parking, but the business community in that area, and quite understandably, because they're in a very fragile part of their business, 9 out of 10 small businesses fail within the first few years, it's very important to them to have that parking there at this initial stage of their business. But of course, we need to, as councillors, recognise that we are functionally making a choice no matter what we do, because we're not going to make everyone happy. And my personal preference at this stage would be to recognise the majority of the general public who would like to see a transformation of their CBD that is significant, and that all of the major urban, all of the urban designers that I've been listening to for the past, two decades have all been saying what we want to try and do is get cars out of our CBDs to help people stop, stick, stay and spend, to help people have a CBD that is beautiful, that is green, that is walkable, that's good for active transport. But of course, we need to recognise that without those small businesses there, we wouldn't have much of a CBD in the first place. So what we councillors are doing tonight is recognising that trying to find a balance between those two desires. My personal feeling is that we actually will be incentivizing cars to go into the CBD if we leave those parking spaces there. And the reason I say that is this: even though there will only be 10 on-street parks, people will start doing blockies in order to try and get those spaces. So those few spaces that are available, it won't be a disincentive for people to come into the middle of the CBD. They will want to do laps to see if they can get to those spaces, when in fact there's plenty of parking actually within Channel Court. There's no shortage of short-term parking within the CBD. Now, I realise that, you know, there will be a difference of opinion both among my colleagues and in the general community, but I need to make it clear, I think, from my perspective, that I want to choose the general will of the community, of the general public, rather than the will of those small businesses. And there is a conflict here, and we need to find a balance, and I realise that not everyone will be happy. My preference would be for to try it with parklets and to try that kind of hybrid model first. And then if the small businesses require that short-term parking to come back, if they clamour for that short-term parking to come back onto the street, well, then, of course, we could discuss removing those parklets. But at the moment, as is proposed, we're actually leaving the parking there. And then at some future date, which is as yet unspecified, that's when we're going to take the street parking away. But, of course, in 2025 or whenever we do end up trying to take that street parking away, we will, I anticipate, get the same response from small business, which is, no, leave our parking directly out front of our shop front. So I realise that we're in a situation where we need to make a choice. And, in fact, this is the opportunity to make that choice because the grant deed only lasts for so long. And it will be a difficult choice. And on this occasion, I will be supporting the majority of the general public, those 742 people who made their views clear, as opposed to those 14 businesses who also have a very legitimate reason for making the choice that they have. But on this occasion, that's where I have to side. But I'm really open-minded to this, and I'm willing to hear out the other councillors and be convinced in one way or another, but that's just my personal feeling at this stage. So thank you so much to Mr. Kemetsoglu for all the work that you've done, and I know that this is an ongoing iterative process, and we will continue to work for the best outcome for the entire community, and that includes the business community as well. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you, Councillor Cordova. I've got Councillor Glade right next.
Thank you. Look, I'll be speaking in support of the recommendation tonight. I echo what you say, Councillor Cordova, about striking a balance, and I think there are some quite a broad spectrum of interests here, and I feel like the recommended option has struck a really nice balance. It allows for that cycleway to go through, but it allows for some parking as well to serve those small businesses that are indeed just starting up. Over the next few years, there'll be many, many hundreds of people moving into the central Kingston, and those small businesses will indeed benefit from that foot traffic, and they probably won't require those car parking spaces directly outside their businesses in a few years' time. So for me, this recommendation strikes a really good balance for where we are right now, and it's allowing for us to take into account the changed circumstances of the CBD in a few more years. So for right now, I'm supporting the recommended option. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Gladewright. I've got Councillor Bastone next and then Councillor Fox.
Thank you, Mayor. Tonight we're deciding on one of three options to finally transform the heart of Kingston, and all of them are compromises. The decision's been many years in the making, and I personally worked with a group which included Bruce Smee, Daniel Smee's father, in 2005-2006. And the plans and suggestions that we had then were quite innovative. There was buses would have been diverted from the main street. The area was more opened up, more friendly. The opportunities have arisen here with council for us to move the service station from where it was and to make John Street a one-way street. I think in every case that we've looked at, the councillors have voted on compromises there too. And as they say, fortune favours the brave, and we have not been brave. I think we've now got so many restrictions in place, that a really innovative plan for Kingston is impossible now. And what we have been able to achieve, I think, is amazing that we have even been able to achieve what the designer has organised for us to choose from tonight. We need to make a decision tonight or else we will lose our funding, certainly. The state of the Channel Highway and the footpaths at the moment are terrible. We've let them lapse and lapse and lapse, hoping that we would be very quick to get something, anything built. But I think in the interests of getting everything done now, we must make a choice of one of these three and not continue to prevaricate on it. And I think I will be voting for the recommendation, option one. I think it's the best solution for what we've got. Not the best solution we could have had, but for what we are now left with, I think that's the best solution. But my vote will be for the option one.
Thank you, Councillor Bastone. I've now got Councillor Fox and then Councillor Westwood.
Thank you, Mayor. I hope you can hear me.
Yes, we can. Yes,
thank you. I guess it's taken 30 years to come to this stage, and I do say that at the moment, the intersection between Hutchins Street and Channel Highway is working really well. There are some very good improvements which are already slowing down the traffic, making it safer for pedestrians, and having more pedestrian crossings is going to improve that situation and slow down the traffic and make it more people-friendly, which has been the long-term view of this council. They've had an enormous vision for all those years, as Councillor Bastone says, and their vision has been to make it more pedestrian-friendly, more cycling-friendly, and to reduce the number of cars in the main street. I guess it's really important to recognise that we have purchased property along this street, especially on the northern side of the street, let's say the BP side of the street, to enable the widening of the footpaths and to be making outdoor dining a possibility in the future. And also we've been visualising outdoor dining and having wide footpaths for people to perambulate along that street. I would really like to see that go ahead now, and I realise that by choosing option one, we're choosing a wish and a promise for the future, because there is no timeline set here. It may take a long time for a council to achieve off-street car parking in high-rise car parks, for example. But if you look at the current studies we've done on car parking, there is adequate car parking in Kingston right now. And a lot of those businesses that are asking us to provide on-street car parking have got the opportunity for car parking behind them. And there are lots of streets in that area where you can just park as long as you like and just walk and buy your coffee or buy your takeaways. And in fact, by having less cars and less parking, it's going to make it a lot better. There is examples in Geelong where this has occurred, and those businesses were crying out and saying, no, we want people to park right outside our door. But when the council helped them get car parking behind their businesses, they accepted that, and now their businesses are booming. They've got far more business. Everybody stays longer and spends more money, and there's a much more relaxed atmosphere and people are attracted to that area. So like Councillor Cordova, that is my preference. And I realise we might get there in the long term, but what worries me that if we go with option one at the moment, we're putting our cyclists at risk. And a lot of the people who've responded said, well, there are no cyclists, but the trouble is it's not safe for cyclists, and that's why there are no cyclists. But we are building cycling paths that come into this area from Whitewater Creek, from Kingston Beach. We're putting in an underpass to connect the wetlands and the Firthside area to this area. We're building a lot of footpaths and connections into the Kingston area. And if we had cycling paths, people would use them and children would be safe on them. But what we're providing in option one is a bike path for expert cyclists, not for your mums and dads, not for the grandmas like me. I wouldn't ride there, and definitely not for children. It's a compromise that I'm not prepared to take for safety reasons, and that's been a very strong message from the cycling community as well. So I know that we have to make a decision tonight, but I do implore you to consider that we go for option three, which combines the concept of what we ultimately are hoping to get with option one, but we get it now rather than later. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Fox. I've got Councillor Westwood next, then Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor, and apologies that I haven't got my camera on tonight. I'm currently at home with COVID, but didn't want to miss the meeting, so apologies for my scratchy voice and non-appearance via camera. I think we can all agree that the one thing we do agree on is that the Kingston CBD desperately needs an upgrade. It is quite disgraceful, really, that Tasmania's fifth largest municipal area has a CBD that looks like it currently does, and my understanding is that this has been on the cards for a long time, but that we have held off because we wanted to try and get it right. I think what we've proven is that there is never going to be a perfect right that suits every user group. We have been lobbied quite heavily by cyclists. The 742 responses to the survey were did comprise a lot of cyclists, and I guess for me, in considering what the majority of the general public expect, option one strikes that balance for me. I think that the majority of our 40,000-ish residents would be very, very happy to see option one implemented. I think it does strike the right balance. I think it's a sensible solution, and I do thank staff for all the work they've done and for the way they've gone about engaging with all the different user groups. So I will certainly be supporting option one, and I urge my colleagues to do the same.
Thank you, Councillor Westwood, and we appreciate that you are attending tonight while you're obviously quite unwell, so that's very much appreciated. I've got Councillor Midgley next, then I will make a contribution, and then we're probably at questions, if anyone has questions, so I go to Councillor Midgley. Councillor Fox, your hand is still up also. Thank you. Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor, and thank you, Councillor Westwood. It's amazing that you're here while you have COVID. Mayor, I'd like to really start by thanking Mr. Kamazoglu for his time on this project, because not only has he been the project manager and covering Kingston Park project management, he's also engaged with a variety of stakeholders, listening to their needs, but also doing that real engagement component. And I think it's a real highlight from this project of the fact that we don't have an engagement officer in this space. So I thank you so very much for the work and the extra work that you've done for this, because you don't have that big team of people working alongside you. I agree with everybody that it really is an important project, and all ratepayers agree that we need to do something about this tired part of Kingston. And we are so fortunate that we have Citadel funding to transform Kingston. So we're making comment, Mayor and Councillors, but I also have quite a lot of questions just to pack further my understanding of this, because I do, at this stage, I do not support the recommendation that is put forward. And that comes from a stem of 20 years of attending sessions around Main Street in Kingston, Main Street across cities all over the world, activation of cities, and also I have been a cycling activist for 25 years pushing for separated cycle lanes and safety. And now more than ever, we need to provide safe infrastructure for people, for active transport, with the increasing petrol prices, with climate change, and the increasing number of e-bikes that we're seeing across our municipality. Every time when I ride, I see more and more people riding and more older people riding their e-bikes around Kingston. So the Kingston Place Strategy 2020-2050 outlined a vision for Central Kingston, and based on feedback we received from the wider community, The vision for Central Kingston sees it as a transition in a unified and legible regional centre where everything is well connected by walking and cycling links and public transport with green and engaging streets attractive to a range of retail, commercial and residential uses. So my first question is, when we engage PlaceScore to undertake the Kingston Place strategy, what was the purpose of engaging them?
Mr. Kamatsoglu, my understanding, just while he turns on, my understanding was that we were trying to establish a high-level vision in relation to what a staged approach would look like, not an actual design concept, but a 30-year vision. But I'm sure Mr. Kamatsoglu can help us with that further, unless Dr. Stevenson wants to take it.
No, I'm happy to leave that to the project manager.
Thank you.
Thank you, through you, Mayor, and thank you for your question, Councillor Midgley. So the purpose of the PlaceScore engagement, excuse me while I just look to the side here because I've got some notes, was to collect the community metrics on what was important long-term to not only the Central Kingston area but the greater Kingston area as well. And it included the whole precinct, which is, and not just the Channel Highway. Obviously, we're focusing on the Channel Highway at the moment, but it includes the whole precinct of Central Kingston. And as you mentioned, 2020 to 2050 is a 50-year vision. The strategy has been developed to attract and guide further investment in Central Kingston. It identifies a shared place vision and principles and provides a framework for those guidelines and visions. The strategy, it provides a high-level blueprint for the future development. And while we need to stay true to the overall vision that was outlined in that PlaceScore report, the recommendations and strategy may need to change over time as a result of detailed designs and other studies that we've undertaken. So since that report's been presented to Council, we've obviously undertaken further surveys and we've undertaken further studies, for example, the GHD traffic report, which suggested that if we shut Central Kingston to traffic, then the outlining network wouldn't cope with the additional load of traffic, and to discourage people to travel through Central Kingston would need a delay of at least 3 minutes, which is quite hard to achieve in a 200 metre strip. It would need quite a number of traffic lights and other functions to try and discourage that. So, as I said, the initial report outlines the future and the framework for that 30-year vision, and that's the parameters we're using as a guideline moving forward with the design.
Thank you. So I can see in the recommendation that there are quite a few things that do tick with this vision: the provision for street trees and plants, a minimum of 3 metre wide footpaths, new lighting and CCTV, narrow travel lanes separated by a central traffic island, space for outdoor dining and widening footpaths. But I cannot see how adding, and that's what we are doing, we are adding additional short-term parking aligns with the community vision that I think Councillor Cordova said over 700 people, had created that community vision. I can't see how additional parking, short-term parking, cars coming into the CBD for short-term coming in and out, how that aligns with the vision. Can I understand that? Sorry, can I have some understanding regarding that?
Yeah, through you, Mayor. So, as we all know, being Tasmanian, people love their cars. The vision, the PlaceScore vision mentioned about the traffic calming and trying to remove cars from Central Kingston. Excuse me, that's my dog welcoming someone home.
We love dogs, all good.
Sorry, can I interrupt? I've just had a message from Ms. Adams, our media advisor, who says that the streaming has gone down. So could we just pause on that thought for a moment and see if she can get it back up and running, because I know there's a lot of community interest in this discussion. So just bear with us. She just needs to do a reset. It's just buffering, so people can't see it. Mrs. Morton, all good? She's recording it, so she is quite...
Yes. I don't believe we stopped, so we're still recording.
Thank you. Okay, Councillor Midgley, if you could just ask that question again, please. And our apologies to everyone who's watching at home. We've been plagued with a range of technical issues this evening, but we will press on. If it does happen again, we will pause and try and resolve it as we just did, but please bear with us. Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. And I just want to say to Mayor and councillors that I do have a lot of questions, and a lot of these thoughts and comments have come from many community members of email. So I've tried to combine all of this into my comment tonight. So the question that I asked was in regards to, I asked about the additional short-term parking that we are adding to the this part of Kingston. Like, we are actually adding additional parking. How does that align with the community vision that the play school came up in the play school recommendations?
Mr. Kane, it's lovely.
Thank you. Through you, Mayor. Yeah, as I mentioned earlier, with the play school report and all the survey undertaken showed that even though there is a desire and a vision to remove parking from Central Kingston and make it a more pedestrian friendly area, as you can see on page 81 of the report, the play school report showed that the associates care more about accessibility and parking than the national benchmark. So it does align with those values that we hold as Tasmanians, that their parking is very important. So that was mentioned, but also the decision aligned with the feedback, I guess, from the local businesses that has happened more recently than the play school report. So the play school report didn't break down those different segments of the community. It was more of a community as a whole report. It didn't break down those particular segments. And as I said, additional stakeholder engagement and feedback that we received since that report's been undertaken, especially from the business community, showed that the parking was important at this particular time. So that's what's been taken into account there. But also within the report, even though it does say trying to alleviate the amount of cars travelling through Central Kingston, it does talk about strengths of Central Kingston and how they should be celebrated and protected as part of the overall plan. And the main strength that actually was mentioned in the report is the car accessibility and parking, how that actually is a strength for the CBD and the businesses. And also walking paths that are connecting to other places, which is also a strength, which we are improving on with the connection through what will be known as Fantail Parade, which is at the moment number 3 John Street, which is a car park there. And as you mentioned, we've got, we are looking at adding putting 20 car parks on Channel Highway, but as part of the project, we also are removing 142 car spots from number 3 John Street. So yes, we are adding those extra few to help those businesses at the moment, listening to their feedback. But as a whole, we're actually taking quite a lot of parking away from Central Kingston, and of those 142, 62 are all-day parks, which are used by commuters to Hobart and also people parking within Central Kingston and working locally. But the other 80 parking spaces are two-hour parking spaces, which are short, relatively short-term turnover parking spaces. So, at a whole, we actually are removing a fair bit of parking as part of the project. But other priorities, as mentioned in the play score report, and these are the main priorities, that are mentioned on the same page in 114. The main things that the community as a whole were looking for out of this project and out of our vision going forward are things to do in the evening, and that includes shopping, dining, and entertainment. So we are creating those spaces for late night economy through the on-street dining, creating that the Fantail Parade walkway is a space for nighttime entertainment. As it could be buskers, it could be a late night market, it could be other things. They wanted to see evidence of public events. So once again, we've created the hub. We've got Kingston Park, where the Fantail Parade could be another space for events as well. And obviously the public open space, which is under construction at the moment, is another going to be a fantastic space for events. The public wanted to see elements of the natural environment. So obviously we're going to add a lot of street trees and vegetation as part of the street to help beautify the street and actually improve that public realm. So it gets away the look of a concrete jungle and actually makes it a more inviting place to stay. And ease of walking around. So obviously we're putting in new pedestrian crossings from where Liberty is across the Channel Highway. We've got the new roundabout at Hutchins Street. The Hutchins Street intersection itself, the road surface will be raised to footpath level to help with disability and access for people with wheelchairs and prams and vision impaired. But also that raised intersection through that roundabout will help with traffic calming and slow cars down. And we've also got Goshawk Way, which will be the extension of Goshawk Way, which is the road that runs past the hub and Kingston Park. That is going to start again very soon, and that will create a new link from south of the CBD to the Huon Highway into Hobart. So having that extra link road will help alleviate the traffic through central Kingston as well. So, yes, we will have that parking space in central Kingston, which, yes, it does invite cars to go and park in the main street. However, we are looking at offsetting that through trying to get cars to actually bypass the CBD if they don't need to drive down through the CBD. And also that traffic calming and slowing the cars down to make it feel like a 40K zone. If it does create a slight backlog throughout that, then that cars will have more options to choose rather than just go straight ahead. They will have more options to choose to go around the CBD.
Thank you. Thanks, a really great picture. Mayor, I do have a few more questions. So with the 142 car parking spaces proposed to be taken away from John Street, how did the projects kind of match up? So, for example, could this part of the project happen first and then later on the John Street car parking is taken away, so therefore we don't have that impact around businesses and the main street being impacted by car parking if for example we were not to choose the option ones recommended in the report, but say we'll go with option three or the hybrid model first. They have to happen together, so can we somehow keep the John Street car parking, or does it have to happen at the same time as this upgrade?
Through you, Mayor. So the plan for the project going forward is to concentrate on the main street first. Therefore, the John Street parking will remain for a longer period of time. There's a number of reasons. Mainly, we don't want to have too much traffic disruption with Goshawk Way and the John Street roundabout upgrade happening at the same time. So we'll look at doing the bus interchange and then moving into the main street, and then the Fantail Parade linkage will be last. However, for that to happen, we will have to remove the entry and exit for the John Street car park to Goshawk Way, because the John Street intersection will be upgraded and the crossover to that car park will be removed. So there'll be additional work to make that happen. That'll be the second stage of work. As soon as the Channel Highway is complete, that Fantail Parade will be under construction straight away. So it won't give, the business owners and shop owners too much more available, and for the public, too much more available parking for that much longer.
Councillor Midgley, I think you're on mute.
Sorry, I am, because I had a child called something loudly.
We won't ask what they called.
Children. I think dinner's ready. Just getting back on. So in regards to the parking that's currently behind the restaurants, the businesses that Mr. K. Kamatsopoulou spoke to, When I was there on Friday, I noticed there was approximately 7 short-term parking and then maybe another 4 or 5 short-term parking, and some of those actually weren't designated parking signs. So say during my 4 hours that I was around doing council work on Friday, I noticed a particular car staying there for the whole time due to the fact that there was designated signage. So who controls that? And can we put more short-term parking signs around that place? And do people even know that they can park behind those businesses there?
Well, if they don't, you've now told them. Mr. Kevin Soglu.
That'd be good.
Through you, Mayor. The parking is private parking, which is installed as part of the development of those new restaurants. And I guess the signage and the control around that parking would be policed by the businesses themselves as it's a private car park. I guess if they're not showing the public that parking's there, then I guess that's an issue that they should address and actually encourage people to come visit the business with that parking in mind. But I guess, if from our point of view, if there's any additional signage we can install to encourage people to use that parking as opposed to the main street, and then something we can look at with our traffic engineering department.
Thank you. Yes, because I know we did receive quite a number of emails from the business community, but nobody highlighted the fact that there was parking out the back. And again, during my time there, there was actually quite a lot of vacant spaces there as well. So it's just, to take that whole big picture into consideration. Yes, we need parking, but we also do have some designated parking out the back as well. And from some of the research and as councillors and the mayor and staff are aware of Steve Burge's work, he is all about working with many councils across Australia and Tasmania about, activating streets and streets for people and cycling pedestrian friendly. And something that he emailed me that I thought I'd like to read out, because he says, the thing that is killing main streets all over that they are becoming convenience centres. People are going to main streets to do one quick task. They then park close to the one destination, do their one task and leave again. This is not sustainable behaviour. We need people to park further away and walk further and hence stay longer in the centre. Removing the curbside parking will without a doubt improve the retail performance of the centre. This is always the case. Less parking, more spending, and there are no exceptions to that rule. And I'm just wondering what Mayor staff's thoughts are in regards to this, because this seems to be current thinking and behaviour changes is happening, and we're seeing, I know we've explored that whole, the feasibility around closing the street to any cars isn't a great model going forward, but we're seeing so many improvements through COVID and things like that. The Sydney of City and Melbourne did some really fantastic outcomes around protected, separated cycle lanes, because they know that that's the movement that we need to move towards. So I'm just wondering, and I think Councillor Cordova also made comment around that stop, stick and spend sort of mentality. So, can I just have some comment in regards to that?
Just before that answer is provided, sorry, a point of order. I'm just not sure whether Councillor Midgley is asking questions or making contribution at the moment.
I'm doing a combination of both.
Okay. You might just want to if you can make the questions a bit shorter, it might help us all. It's really hard to follow because they're very long questions. So it might just be if you can try and condense the questions, might help Mr. Kamitsoglu in answering them and the rest of us to follow. But obviously you've got that latitude. It's just hard to keep track of at the moment. But
thank you. Thank you, Mayor. And apologies. Would you like me to repeat a question or summarise that?
I'm in Mr. Kay's hands.
Through you, Mayor. I've got the question about, cities and CBDs and councils are moving away from that model of having the car parking in and moving parking further out of the CBD to encourage people to walk in. This is typically not something that's done overnight, though. This is typically a longer-term vision, and generally that the parking is set in place for people to park outside those areas before they actually take away that central parking. And also what we have to consider ourselves locally is our demographic as well. So obviously we've got an older population, we've got accessibility issues, the topography of Kingston itself is quite hilly, so there's more components to it than just that, and it's not a one-size-fits-all. Other population centres, and you mentioned Geelong earlier, and I know other places in Melbourne and say Lygon Street and places like that have taken away parking, but we've also got to remember that those cities have fantastic public transport, and they've got a large population with high density, so they have a lot of people living a lot closer to those places as well, which obviously has an impact on the amount of foot traffic and actually helps out those businesses as well. So there's a lot to take in as a whole, and it's not a one-size-fits-all resolution all the time.
Thank you. So I'd like to thank the businesses for writing to us councillors to let them know their concerns in regards to parking. My biggest concern, I think, was Councillor Cordova and Councillor Fox adhere to this, was in regards to the fact that businesses will never be happy with taking away the short-term parking. So if we go with option one, and then in 5 years or when it says that, you know, we will have the parking, you know, big parking facility in central Kingston, they still might want people still might want to park out the front. Like, how can we be assured that we will transition into a parklet model, and perhaps in the future, councillors not being lobbied to the fact that people still want their parking out the front? How can we be assured that this vision will happen?
Mr. Kamensoglu.
Through you, Mayor, and thank you for the question. So between now and then, there is evidence we can gather to take to the businesses to say, look, our plan going forward and the recommendation tonight is all about an increase in foot traffic. As we know, King's Quarter is under construction at the moment. There's 80 homes being constructed at the moment by Chosen Purple. They'll be completed within the next 18 months at maximum. And then the development over in the Kingston Park area will continue over the next 3 to 5 years. Therefore, there'll be 1,000 to 1,300 residents living within 200 metres of the CBD. Add that up with what we hope is improved investment in central Kingston, and we can see how much foot traffic is going to change between now and then, and we can take that to the businesses and say, look, as we said in our recommendation, foot traffic is going to increase. You guys aren't going to be so reliant on parking. Here's the evidence to back it up. We're going to stick with our original recommendation, and this is what we plan going forward. And the businesses, I guess we can get that message across to them too, that, look, we're not taking away something from them. We're actually giving them something. We're actually going to give them an additional space that they can use for their business, an additional revenue-raising stream. And it'll help beautify their shopfront and, as I said, encourage more people to visit their shops as well as the central region. So there is things we can put in place to help the businesses understand that this actually is better for them as a whole, as better for the community as well.
Thank you. Thank you very much. And thank you for answering all of my questions tonight. So in hearing all of that, I would like to propose to put forward an amendment. And Ms. Morton has my amendment. Sorry, I had emailed a couple this afternoon, but I've just sent one. It's the last email that I have sent, and it is in regards to that I would like to propose that option three is the recommended motion to put forward, and there's also a change in the B section as well.
Okay, so just on a procedural matter, what you're actually proposing is just an alternative recommendation. We're currently debating the substantive motion, but you want to move a totally different recommendation, so I'm not sure that the Acting General Manager can assist here, but I don't think what you're doing right now, given we haven't voted on the original one, is correct. Dr. Stevenson, are you able to assist?
Through you, Mayor, just give me one moment, but I'm just looking up around amendments to make sure I'm correct in my advice.
Because I haven't even had a chance to speak yet on the substantive motion, so.
Basically, I can confirm that any councillor who did not move or second the motion may move an amendment motion. There is nothing in the meeting procedures that limits the form of the amendment. It just has to be voted on. So I don't believe there is any issue in pausing to consider the amendment.
Okay. Do we have the amendment that we can put up on the screen? Thank you, Dr. Stevenson.
Ms. Morgan, would you like me to do that?
Councillor Lee, while we're waiting for that, could you read it out to us while we're getting it up on the screen so that we at least know the content of it?
Thank you, Mayor. And I am also happy to put it as a question after you speak, if you like. But the amendment would read that council and A endorse option 3 as the initial preferred layout for the Channel Highway CBD upgrade as detailed in this report. And then the B would read implement the hybrid solution that includes the removal of 10 parking spaces on the southbound side of Channel Highway to allow for installation of on-street dining, protected cycle lane and street furniture by 2024 to realise the council endorsed Kingston Place strategy. So the two changes are endorse option 3 rather than option 1, and the other one is in the B to add by 2024 line.
Do I have a seconder for that? Seconded by, so the amendment is moved by Councillor Midgley, seconded by Councillor Fox. Councillor Midgley, would you like to speak to the amendment?
Thank you, Mayor. I believe that this amendment gives a compromise to many people in the community, and that is why I put forward that amendment. I'm just wondering if Mr. Kutmazoglu would like to just again remind us of what that option 3 is. I know he did with Councillor Cordova, but if you'd like to just state that again so that all councillors are aware of what in regards that means and why he then put forward that option 3 for the consideration for this meeting tonight.
Well, I think you're right that he has actually stated it. Mr. Kutmazoglu, could you just briefly go over option 3 again, please?
Through you, Mayor. Yes, option 3 is a combination of 1 and 2. So the option 1 section is from the Hutchins Street roundabout through to the Channel Court entry exit, which has on-street parking and a painted cycle lane, and that will be converted to a separated cycle lane and on-street dining at a later date. After the Channel Court entry and exit, the cycle lane will merge into the floating bus stop treatment on the inside of the bus stop.
Thank you, Mayor. So I feel like this one, from sitting around the table, you know, virtual table tonight, there is a lot of support for the option 1, and I feel like this option 3 will, be aligned to suit a broader members of the community. And also I think it's really important to have the timeline there, because the current timeline is in regards to the parking facility, and that could be in 10 years, where I think it's good to have a date of 2024 so that we can then move to the parklets and the protected bike lane sooner, because that is the real impetus of, again, I'm putting forward this, because we need protected cycle lanes to encourage people, to be able to ride safely, encourage all demographics and ages to be able to ride safely.
Thank you. Do I have any speakers or questions? I just have a question, which I'll just go ahead and ask before I call for others. Mr. Kutmazoglu, in option 3, people getting off the bus with the floating island, would they have to walk across the cycle lane?
Thank you, Mayor. Yes, they would have to cross the cycle lane. I think there is an example of what this would look like in the council report. Apologies, I'm not sure. Page, it's on page 13?
Page 16, I see it on.
Page 16. I just wanted to clarify that that's the case. So thank you for doing that. My concern is that the Access Committee, having looked at both options, are very much against any situation where there would be a floating bus stop or anywhere that would put particularly vision impaired people and those with mobility devices and issues at odds with cyclists. So if you can imagine being vision impaired and getting off a bus, not being able to see and having to cross a cycle lane to get to the footpath would be a very scary and potentially dangerous experience as well. So the Access Committee voted unanimously, I believe we had 11 members of the committee at the time when that occurred, that only option one was acceptable to them. So I just wanted to make that contribution in relation to this amendment. This is a very difficult issue for us, and we need to try and satisfy a range of stakeholders. And we've talked about the business community tonight. We've talked about pedestrians tonight. We've talked about cyclists at length. We've talked about business owners. Nobody as yet has mentioned anything about people with disabilities, yet for many of them who can't drive, being able to walk around safely in their own communities is of utmost importance to them. And so I do say very strongly on their behalf and as chair of the Access Committee that they do not want to see a situation where they are placed in conflict with cyclists. So I would just ask people in considering this amendment to bring that into consideration. Now, further speakers on the amendment, I have Councillor Fox. And then Councillor Westwood. Councillor Fox, we can't hear you.
Thank you, Mayor. I think the most important part of this amendment is the fact that there is a timeline, 2024, where this implementation will occur, rather than having to wait for possibly 10 years in order for the parking to be removed. I have also been chairman of the Access Committee for a good 20 years. And I realised that they were shown the proposal for the bus stop and then the bike lane behind it at a recent meeting. But I don't think the Access Committee have seen all the detailed drawings and examples of where this happens in other states and overseas, where there are ways of making it's safe for people exiting the bus or getting onto the bus with disabilities, as well as bikes using the area, and the bikes would have to stop. They would have to give way to pedestrians, and there are stop lights that can be applied. There are signs that can be applied. There are tactile surfaces that would be applied. There are even noises that could be made for people who are visually impaired. So there are many techniques, and I feel that by 2024 there will be plenty of opportunity for the staff to present those safety devices and techniques in this particular scenario. It's not something that we've invented, and if you look on page 12 of the agenda, there is a very well laid out picture on attachment D, which shows how the bike path goes behind the bus, how there are pedestrian crossings across the bike path, and there is adequate signage, and also there are ways of having handlebars, like on page 13, that show where the bus would stop and the bikes would be able to hold on to the handlebars, but there'd be a very restricted area coming in and out of the bus stop from the actual bus itself where the doors open, that's where the people would walk and only there, and then that's where the cyclists would not be allowed to go. So it's just a matter of educating and understanding the safety issues, and I don't think that should exclude the fact that the Access Committee hasn't had that put before them yet and hasn't understood that. We shouldn't exclude the possibility of this particular option, because I do think in the long term this is the safest option. It's what we would ultimately have if we went with this motion, and even option one, we would ultimately have this scenario where the I understand, or maybe I should ask Mr. Kamatsoglu, whether in fact with this particular scenario it would be the same as the hybrid version, where we would also have the bus stop integrating with pedestrians and having accessibility issues resolved. Is that a case, Mr. Mitsoglu?
Through you, Mayor, I was just trying to understand that question. So the hybrid option of option one is the cycle lane would continue on the outside of the bus. So therefore, as you said, there is the risk of bus and cycling collision. Whereas option three alleviates the and removes the collision potential between bus and cyclists. So, but then obviously, then you've got the issue on the other side between cyclists and pedestrian. But as you said, there are proven measures around the world that that address these particular issues.
Thank you. That's the answer I was looking for. So in that regard, I would support this particular amendment. I think having a timeline is very important, and I think it will give everybody reassurance that the vision that has been expressed by the community members, which are so many, that we are working towards that, and that we're spending this money on achieving that vision within the budget that we've been given. It would be such a shame to have this amazing opportunity to move forward on this issue and to lose that opportunity by not having the final outcome in the long run that we all would like to see. And I really hope that everybody can understand this situation and vote for the option that is now before us. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Fox. Next, I have Councillor Westwood.
Thank you, Mayor. So, Mayor, it's becoming a bit confusing with all the different options. I don't support option three. I think we're losing sight of the bigger picture here. We're not trying to reinvigorate our CBD for cyclists. We're trying to make our CBDs an inviting and attractive place to come and stay. So the central Kingston place objectives were that our central CBD was self-sufficient, walkable, green and stable, and attracts investment. Walkable meaning that central Kingston should ensure a safe, comfortable and enjoyable walking experience that would encourage people to get out of their cars. And I feel like option one, which was the previous option we were debating, does that. I do know a lot of people who cycle, but I certainly wouldn't say that they were a majority of our population. I bought my first push bike in January so that I could ride with my kids. I would not ride from my home into the Kingston CBD, however. I would utilise some of our tracks and trails that go around the outside. And as the former chair of the Safety Committee, I think any situation that we would knowingly create where someone wanting to either board a bus or disembark from a bus has a risk of getting bowled over by a cyclist is just absolutely unfathomable. And I don't think, I think we're going a bit far. Let's just be sensible. Let's spend the money that we've got on doing up the Kingston CBD. We're not trying to cater for the cycling community. We're trying to cater for the majority of our community. And the plan that Mr. Kamatsoglu has recommended, the recommended option put forward by staff, is what I believe to be the best option in achieving that.
Thank you, Councillor Westwood. So we're still on the amendment. I've got Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor, and I am speaking in favour of this amendment. And the reason is that I think there is actually a fundamental misunderstanding currently around the issue of people with disabilities and the problems of crossing. So firstly, might I say that it is absolutely paramount that we make sure that people living with disability have absolute universal access in our community and that they are not put in harm's way by any decision that this council makes. That is of paramount importance. Let me also say that in August of 2020, this exact issue was discussed by the Edinburgh City Council in Scotland, and they had this exact conversation that we're having now. There was concern among the access committees of the City of Edinburgh, and here was the conclusion that they came to, as reported in the Edinburgh News on the 25th of August in 2020. The council administration voted, quote, to recognise that the floating bus stops that have been installed on Leith Walk for some time and that monitoring does not indicate any significant risk of increased pedestrian-cyclist conflicts and therefore limited impact on pedestrian safety, end quote. And I would like to draw our councillor's attention to what Mr. Kamitsoglu just said, that there are proven measures around the world that would mitigate those issues. So the chronology of this situation is thus. The Access Committee did not have a good look at the proposal as we see before us. They had a good look at an earlier proposal, and they were not provided with the graphics, the details, and the designs that clearly mitigate those issues that have been raised. It's fundamentally important that we recognise that all bicyclists, all cyclists or e-scooters or what have you that are moving down that travel way must give way to pedestrians. And there are many measures, including whether it's a traffic light system or whether it's all the things that Councillor Fox mentioned, signage. It's abundantly clear by signage that all cyclists have to give way to pedestrians. So that conflict does not exist. And I wonder if I might ask Mr. Kamitsoglu to give some examples of what those measures are which prevent pedestrian-cyclist conflict in the context of floating bus stops. What are those examples from around the world that stop the issues that the people living with disabilities have raised that, about their concerns? What are those examples?
Through you, Mayor. Yes, thank you for that, Councillor Cordova. Some of the measures included, as you mentioned, and shown on page 13 is a couple of examples where the cycle lane becomes, as you said, you can see the pedestrian walk signs and those yellow rumble strips are just indicators to the cyclists to say, hey, slow down, you're coming into a vulnerable area. Just like the raised roundabout mentioned earlier, the raised road, it's indicating to the cars, hey, you're coming into an area where you expect pedestrians. So that's one example. Obviously, the signage, the mini zebra crossings show that that's to give way to pedestrians. You can put rails or artwork in place between the bike lane and the passenger step-on, step-off zone, which will draw the passengers to those particular zebra crossings, so the passengers aren't just crossing anywhere in the bike lane, so that way the cyclists can expect pedestrians to cross at those designated locations, not just anywhere across the bike lane. So there's a couple of things like that. Obviously, this is an uphill bike lane as well, so the cyclists will be travelling slower. And a lot of cyclists who travel through Central Kingston will have in the cleats, so the clicking the pedals, and obviously stopping on an uphill to yield to pedestrians, it becomes quite difficult. So therefore, we can have the handrails can be used as a second treatment, so they can hang on to that, so they don't have to unclip and re-clip in again. So there are a couple of treatments for both users there.
Thank you very much for that explanation. And to conclude my remarks through you, Mayor, we need to make it abundantly clear, as they did in Edinburgh, that people with visual impairment or people living with disabilities, when they get off the bus, they have right of way and they can walk into that cycleway because the cyclists, anyone on an e-scooter, will be with the visual cues that are there, with the mitigation measures that are there. As you can see on page 13, it is abundantly clear, particularly in that bottom photograph, that if you're a cyclist, it would be tantamount to riding through a red light in the middle of a heavily trafficked intersection. It would be so abundantly clear to cyclists and e-scooters that they have to stop. If they see a person there and the sight lines will be such that it will be abundantly clear that anybody on any kind of vehicle travelling down that separated cycleway, if they see a pedestrian anywhere nearby, they have to stop. They do not have right of way. The person getting off that bus has right of way. So, as I say, in Edinburgh, they have dealt with this. They dealt with this conversation. And I would like us to be like Edinburgh. In Kingborough, I would like us to be leading the way when it comes to active transport and activating our CBD. And I know that even though it is concerning, we need to work through those concerns and actually educate people about what this actually means. So let's not let fear rule out fear. And let's go with this argument. Thank you, Matt.
Thank you, Councillor Cordova. I've got another question for Mr. Cadence Oglu. Could you just remind me, because if I was watching this debate at home, I would think that we were talking about the entire length of the highway. Could you just indicate to me, because I sat in my office this afternoon and looked outside, it's around 70 metres that we're talking about for this particular treatment. Is that correct?
Thank you, Mayor. So the treatment for the first section of the road is around about 73 metres, and that's where the parked cars are at the moment from Hutchins Street to Channel Court, about 73 metres. And then it's around about another 50 metres of this treatment of the bus stop. So if you went for option three, you'd be looking at approximately 120 metres of protected cycle lane, whereas with option one, the ultimate protection you would have is 73 metres.
So we're talking an extra 50 metres of cycleway. What do those cycleways link onto? What does that... So if I was to ride my bike, if I was one of the 36 cyclists in a 24-hour period who went up the Channel Highway as opposed to the 11,000 cars, and I came from where I live and came out of the bottom of Kingston Park and then decided I wanted to travel up the Channel Highway, I would be, for a period of time, probably no matter where I wanted to go, not on a totally separated bike path. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. So if you're coming from Taruna, you'd be coming from a painted on-road bike lane, and then if you're heading further south towards the McDonald's roundabout, you'd be entering a painted on-road bike lane. So they're the connection to either side at the moment.
And is there any opportunity in the future to extend a separated pathway further up past Freeman Street? Because my understanding is there isn't, because we don't have the width in that area.
The width isn't an issue in that area. It's the amount of driveways. So you literally can't block off the driveway access to the businesses and the houses along that particular strip. So you can't get a separated dedicated cycle lane in that particular zone due to that reason.
So effectively what we're now debating at length is putting in a separated, fully separated pathway for cyclists that goes for 123 metres and cannot be extended past that because of driveways intersecting and blocking off access to businesses. Is that a fair assumption? Is that a fair statement?
Yes.
Okay, so given that and given our need to get the... We have grant funding from the state government that we need to spend and we have a time frame. And I don't believe that we can spend more time going out to public consultation when we already have had extensive public consultation. I don't know why we are spending so much time talking about something that is not going to make a significant difference because it's not going to link onto anything. If this was the other way around and this was the missing piece of the puzzle and there were opportunities to extend this, it would make sense to do this now. But there are too many things that I believe are questionable in this. We're still on the amendment. Does anyone have any further contributions on the amendment or questions because otherwise I will put the amendment. So the amendment, if we could just bring that back up onto the screen, please, Mrs. Morton. It was the amendment that was, I beg your pardon, Councillor Midgley, did you want to sum up the contribution on the amendment?
Thank you, Mayor. Just a quick one, just to thank Councillor Fox and Councillor Cordova for their questions and clarifying, and Councillor Cordova for highlighting examples where this has happened. And we could be leading the way for this in Tasmania, and I'm sure in the future we'll see floating bus stop implementation.
Thank you. So I'll put the motion. It's as printed on the screen. I will read it out for those people who are not able to read it from the screen, for if they're only listening and not watching what's going on. So it's moved by Councillor Midgley, seconded by Councillor Fox, and it is that Council endorse option 3 as the initial preferred layout for the Channel Highway CBD upgrade as detailed in this report. B, implement the hybrid solution that includes the removal of 10 parking spaces on the southbound side of Channel Highway to allow for installation of on-street dining, protected cycle lane and street furniture by 2024 to realise the council endorsed Kingston Place strategy. All those in favour of the amendment? Just one moment. If we could just have the amendment taken off the screen so I can see all faces, and that you actually raise your physical hands so we can get the recording of the votes. Just bear with us. Otherwise, we can't see anyone. Councillor Westwood, if you just want to raise your virtual hand. And Councillor Fox, do we still have you there? Because we can't see you.
Yes. Okay. Yes, I hope
so. Well, I can't. Your video is off, but we can...
No.
Maybe if Dan turns his camera off, that might make room.
Well,
there's three hands, Mayor, Councillor Cordova, Councillor Fox and myself.
Yeah, thank you. I'll just continue chairing the meeting. Thank you. So those in favour of the motion are Councillors Midgley, Fox and Cordova. Those against the amendment is Councillors Street, Gladewright, Bastone, Westwood and Reet. The amendment is lost. So we go back to the substantial motion, which was moved by Councillor Street and seconded by Councillor Gladewright. If I go back to where we were, I think most people had spoken on the substantive motion. I haven't yet. So I think everybody else has spoken on the substantive motion. So I wanted to make a contribution on the substantive motion, and then if there are any further questions, we can go to those. I think that this has been a difficult issue because we have so many stakeholders, and I really appreciate the work that everybody has done with their interest groups, their advisory committees and so on, to try and get as many people engaged in this debate as possible. I think it's been really worthwhile. It's been one of our bigger community engagement processes, with over 700 people being involved. And I think what's really interesting out of that is that a large percentage of the respondents, a lot of them were saying they're very excited about it, and they're saying get on and do it. They want to see something done. And at the moment we know that central part of the Kingston CBD is not appealing. It does not look like the heart of Kingston. It is in bad condition. It's difficult if you have a disability trying to get up and down some of those curb ramps and the lumpiness of footpaths and trying to get across is very, very difficult. In the community consultation, when we asked people the questions of are there any other comments that you'd like to add, there were about 370 people who added responses. And the top ones from that, the top one was actually more parking spaces. That's what the most people said when they were asked randomly to nominate anything. They said more parking spaces. The next one was excitement about the project, getting it done, the urgency. And the next one after that was more green spaces and native vegetation. So I thought that was a really interesting sort of cross-section of what people are hoping for. I note Councillor Cordova's comments earlier about the businesses, small businesses, and the large percentage of small businesses that unfortunately fail in the first 12 months. And I think we continue to be in very unprecedented times in Tasmania with COVID. And we've had representations from our business community who have said that they have noticed a change in the pattern of people who are coming into their businesses in the Channel Court area and on the Channel Highway. And they say more people are choosing to take their food away because they still feel vulnerable with COVID, or they want to sit outside and eat because they feel that they've got better ventilation and so on. So we need to recognise that these are difficult times for those businesses. And some of them, as we've pointed out, are fledgling businesses. And so it would be remiss of us not to have a long-term plan and to go ahead and take parking away now when there's a longer-term alternative that will still provide some added security for cyclists. And I say that because it is a 40-kilometre zone. The Australian standard for a 40-kilometre zone is 1.5 metres separation for the cycle lane being 1.5 metres in length. What we're offering in this design one is actually 1.9 metres. So it goes beyond what the Australian standard is. For that reason, that we do still want, of course we all want to make sure that our cyclists are protected, but we're trying to satisfy a range of stakeholders here, and it's a juggling act. It's not easy. And I know that after the decision tonight, there will be some of our stakeholders and some members of the community who are frustrated in the decision that we're going to make and disappointed. And I fully accept that. But I think that collectively we are trying to weigh all those up, and that is a big juggling act. And I believe that, you know, we all have at the best of intentions in our hearts trying to do the best for our community. So I'd like to thank Mr. Kamet Soglu for the incredible amount of work that he has done on this. He has led this project very, very well. He's gone above and beyond with all the extra community engagement that he has done, going back to, you know, as recently as last week, going back to businesses and speaking to them and trying to make sure that everyone understands what it is that we're moving ahead with here. But let's not come away from this being disappointed. Let's come away from this saying we actually are part of a decision now that is going to make a significant difference for the central part of Kingston, and is going to make people want to come there and stay there and not just pass through. And that's what we're trying to achieve in a nice, green, open space where everyone can enjoy it. So thank you all very much for your contributions. Are there any further questions before I ask Councillor Street? Yep, Councillor Cordova.
My question is, I would like to ask if the mover and seconder would be amenable to adding in the 2024 date to Clause B.
So the mover was Councillor Street and the seconder was Councillor Gladewright.
No, Mayor.
In that case,
I wish I could explain the reasoning behind that, but I don't have the opportunity to do that, unfortunately.
So in that case, Mayor, am I able to move an amendment to add in that 2024 date to Clause B?
Yes, you can. And you've got a seconder. So you'll make, could you just, before we seek a seconder, we just need to be clear what we...
As per Councillor Midgley's suggestion, it would be to amend Clause B to read, I think it was up on the screen before, implement the hybrid solution upon completion of a dedicated parking facility in central Kingston that includes the removal of 10 car parking spaces on the south side of the Channel Highway to allow for the installation of on-street dining, a protected cycle lane, public art and street furniture by no later than 2024. Is that what it was before or something like that? Yeah, by 2024 to realise. So that's perfectly fine as it. Yep, exactly. As is on the screen now.
Sorry, I'm just going back to my agenda papers to make sure. So part A would remain the same.
Correct.
And part B is part B from Councillor Midgley's motion. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's fine. I mean, the actual wordsmithing is the important thing is just to add a date, and the date that I'm suggesting is by 2024. So the exact wording, the intention is just to add a date.
Okay, so we're adding the words by 2024 after. After, could you scroll down, Mrs. Morton, please, back to, yep, and street furniture.
By 2024,
yep. 2024, and then full stop. Because the original amendment from Councillor Midgley had some additional words at the bottom. So yep. Is that where you're stopping it? No, So can you just clarify what you want? Because the recommendation is Councillor Midgley's part B was different to, it didn't just have by 2024, it had a different set of words. So could you just clarify what you, if, are you just, if we turn to the agenda, page 8.
Yep.
Are you just seeking to add the words after street furniture to add by 2024?
Yes.
For part B. Okay. That's, we got confused. Yep. So it's to amend clause B by adding the words by 2024 after
at the end of the sentence.
At the end of the sentence, correct. Now I have some hands up. I'll just get a seconder for this first.
I'll be the seconder.
Thank you, Councillor Fox. Councillor Gladwright, have you got a question?
I've got a contribution.
Okay, that's all right. We'll come back to you then. I was just clarifying that it wasn't a question in relation to the amendment. So, Councillor Cordova, did you want to speak to the amendment?
Thank you, Mayor. Briefly to say that what this does is shore up the proposal by giving it a firm time frame, and that's really important because we know that these things can tend to stretch out, and the community would expect, I think, that we get onto this as fast as possible, as the Mayor mentioned. And what's exciting, actually, about this opportunity is that it gives us something to work towards. It gives us a very clear and defined goal, and that means that it also gives the business community certainty, and that, I think, as you know, many councils would agree, is one of the key issues in making sure that we have a CBD that is vibrant. But it also speaks to that the general public who made clear expressions about wanting to bring nature into the centre and have a clean and green walkable CBD. So what I think is good about this opportunity is that it is a compromise, and it's a compromise that gives both the business community certainty, but it also gives us as a council a very firm date to work around. So I think rather than leave the majority of stakeholders unhappy, what we are doing here by adding in just a simple date, what we're doing is actually giving both the business community certainty, but we're also giving the general public the thing that they actually asked for, as we can see from the survey. So I think this is a real win-win. I think to not do it would actually disgruntle probably a lot of stakeholders, not just the bicycling community, but also it would, you know, kind of leave in limbo. How is a business supposed to make its decisions in a kind of medium to long-term timeframe when there's no clear date on when this kind of when these kind of works are going to take place? So I think the very least we could do is make sure that there's a firm date in place, and that will make everybody happy. So I think it's a good compromise. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you, Councillor Cordova. Next, I've got Councillor Gladwright and then Councillor Fox.
Thank you, Mayor. I'd like to draw everyone's attention to page 6 at 4.12. As the former Kingston High School site continues to be developed by Traders in Purple, more parking will be removed from Central Kingston, namely the 154 all-day parking spaces in the temporary car park at Skipper Lane. Preliminary work is underway on a new parking facility which will combat these future parking losses. The best case scenario timeframe in which this facility could be completed is late 2025. I don't think it's fair that we're having a date imposed on us at this time of the night when we've already been discussing this issue for nearly 2 hours now. I just don't think it's appropriate that we're trying to be pinned down to a date now when we don't actually have all the information, and I feel like this isn't really fair on us all at this point in the evening.
Thank you, Councillor Gladright. I've got Councillor Fox, then Street, then Westwood. Councillor Fox.
This is the real sticking point that I have raised with Mr. Kenrick Sovnley, because I feel that if we don't have a time frame, this is such an open-ended statement that we're just going to do it one day when all the parking's resolved. It could take 10, could take 20 years. But at least, even if we can't achieve this 2024 deadline, we can at least be looking at it and reviewing the situation at that point of time. We, as a council, we can't lock ourselves in, but at least it gives everybody an indication that this is going to be a change that we're considering quite soon, particularly the businesses who might have short-term leases on their current contracts. We don't know. Most of them are tenants. They don't actually own the buildings. And the actual owners of the buildings that they are in are already providing them car parking, for example, in Channel Court. And also there is parking behind the businesses on the other side of the road. And I think if they know that they're going to lose their car parking, they might take an opportunity to move into the Traders in Purple area, for example, and they know that they can then think ahead to that solution to their problem if they really desperately want to have parking that is going to be for cars that are zipping in and out. And I think it also eliminates the concern that a lot of people are going to have, is that we're just consolidating the cars. We're doing more for cars unless we have this amendment in here than we are for the pedestrians and for the calming of this street, and also for the vegetation. The sooner we can get that vegetation in, the sooner it will grow and we'll have shade and we'll have a really nice ambient place to be. If we leave this drag on and on, everybody sitting around the table tonight, the virtual table, may not be able to experience something that they've been looking forward to for nearly all their lives. So I recommend the amendment, and I thank Councillor Cordova. I think it's really important that we do put a date there, even though it might not be totally 100% achievable. It's moving in the right direction, and it's an indication of a time that's achievable. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Fox. Councillor Street and then Councillor Westwood. We can't hear you, Councillor Street.
Oh, I hate it when other people do that, so I can't believe I've done it myself.
I've done it several times tonight.
Just a question, Mayor. Given what's in the report, I'm wondering whether Mr. Komatsoglu could answer this question, and that is whether he thinks it's actually feasible to set a date.
Mr. Cameron Sutley.
Through you, Mayor. I guess from my point of view, it is quite a hard thing to put a date on. I guess that's why the report had 2025 as a best-case scenario. So I guess best-case scenario, if you wanted to add a date, was probably 2025. But there's quite a few variables to consider before you put a timeline on it.
Thank you, Mr. Komatsoglu. Was that all, Councillor Street?
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you. Councillor Westwood.
Thank you. We do already have a time frame. Part B says implement the hybrid solution upon completion of a dedicated parking facility in central Kingston. That is, in my view, the best we can do in terms of putting a time frame on this. We don't have a firm time frame. We don't have a clear date. That might be all well and good, but particularly at the moment, with the shortage of materials and supplies, shortage of contractors. I don't think we can possibly add anything into a recommendation that we know, hand on heart, is not practical. I don't support the amendment.
Thank you, Councillor Westwood. Are there any further speakers on the amendment? Otherwise, I'm going to put the amendment. So the amendment is to add the words by 2024 at the end of Part B of the recommendation. It was moved by Councillor Cordova and seconded by Councillor Fox. Could you raise your physical hands if you support the amendment? It's supported by Councillors Midgley, Cordova and Fox. Councillor Westwood, your hand is up. Is that a hand? No, well, that was quick. Thank you. So it's affirmative by Councillors Midgley, Cordova and Fox. Those against the amendment? Councillors Bastone, Gladewright, Street, Westwood and Reet, the amendment is lost. So we're back on the substantive motion. I believe everybody has spoken. So I'm going to ask Councillor Street if you would like to sum up.
Thank you, Mayor. Look, I don't think that there's much to say that hasn't already been said during the debate, but I do thank my colleagues for their contributions and certainly commend the motion to Council.
Thank you, Councillor Street. I'm going to put the motion. It's as printed in the agenda paper. It was moved by Councillor Street, seconded by Councillor Gladewright, with the recommendation on page 8. All those in favour, please raise your hands. So I can see Councillors Fox, Midgley, Bastone, Westwood, Gladewright, Street and Reet. Those against. And against is Councillor Cordova. The motion is carried. Thank you very much. I'm going to give us a 5-minute break now. My apologies to those people who are watching at home. That was just quite an intense, long debate on the one subject. So we're just going to have a 5-minute comfort break. Thank you again, Mr. Kamitsoglu, for your presence here tonight and for answering all those many questions. And if we could pause the streaming and recording, and if we could all try and be back by, say, 7:45. You've got 8 minutes. Thank you. Yes, that is a cat. She's not being tortured. Are we good to go, Mrs. Morton? Thank you. And are we, what about, hang on, Sam, good to go. Okay. Welcome back. Thank you, everybody, for your patience. That was quite a long debate, but definitely one that we needed to have happen. We now move to page 33, Kingston Tennis Club grant request with a recommendation on page 35. Do I have a mover or a seconder, please? I have a mover in Councillor Cordova, a seconder in Councillor Midgley. Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor. Very briefly, what we're looking at here is a recommendation relating to the Kingston Tennis Club and the support that Council is able to provide. Firstly, I should say congratulations that the Kingston Tennis Club has recently received advice that they have been successful in securing a grant of $220,000 from the state government's Improving the Playing Field program towards the cost of court upgrades. And Council has had a long relationship with the club in the past, including trying to help out where there was a previously unsuccessful grant application that took place, and that was for a commitment to the tune of $50,000. But in this case, sadly, that grant didn't come through for the club, but this grant has come through. And so the recommendation here from Council officers provide an amount of $26,000 to the Kingston Tennis Club from its 2021 and 2022 operational budget as a contribution towards the cost of upgrading their court facilities. Basically, this is to provide the club with contingency so that they have the funds available to so that they have the funds available in case of contingency, but it also provides a fantastic contribution to a club that is doing some great work. So I was hoping if there is a staff member available to talk us through the need to have that contingency fund there, and also the important point that this isn't coming out of next year's budget. This is money that is already available in the budget. That's my understanding. So is there anyone to speak to that by any chance, Mayor?
Sorry, Mr. Basham.
Thank you, Mayor. Through you, Mayor. Thank you, Councillor Cordova. The actual program itself is going to be upgrading four of the courts at the tennis club itself. Two of those courts will ultimately be world-class facilities, so that we'll have members of the community, also potentially interstate and international people, be able to use them. My understanding within Mr. Breen's absence is that the money itself will be funded, obviously, from council surplus, so that any surplus that is provided at the end of the year would just be minus this figure of, at this point in time, $26,000.
Thank you. And further to that, my understanding, and through you, Mayor, is it true that the club is also looking at ways, it's currently member-based, there's provision for public usage of their courts via a new online booking system. I was going to ask about that, but I'm not sure if Mr. Basham is... Yeah, Mr. Basham, are you familiar with the, through you, Mayor, with the opportunities for the general public to participate as well with the tennis club?
If Mr. Basham isn't, then I am, because I met with them. But Mr. Basham.
Through you, Mayor, I also had the opportunity to meet with the president of the tennis club, and they advised me this in reasonable detail. So with this funding will also be an online booking portal, which will allow all people, and it will be a very inclusive area as well, to access this facility. What would in turn happen was a person could book online to use the facility, for instance, at night. They would receive a code, and then that code would be inputted into a keypad and allow them to enter that facility to train or otherwise.
Thank you for that. And so to conclude my remarks, Mayor, I think it's really great that we have a Kingborough sports precinct with 33 sports organisations that are doing phenomenal work. We have the opportunity here, thanks to leveraging a state government grant, to be able to support a club that really does need some upgrades. And Council's previously indicated that we're willing to lean in and support clubs where they need that help. It's good news that this isn't coming out of next year's budget, so it doesn't come at the cost of some other things that Council might be doing. It's actually leveraging our current year's budget and being able to actually support the community even more, because at the end of the day, when we're charging people rates, we should be delivering that money back out in terms of providing excellent services to the community, and this is one such example of that. So I'm really pleased that Council is able to lean in, and I hope that my Councillor colleagues support this motion. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you. I have Councillor Street next.
Thank you, Mayor. I'd like to move an amendment to the motion, please. And in the first instance, I'll ask whether the mover and seconder would be agreeable, and if not, then I will move the motion to amend. And that is that the amount of $26,000 be changed to $35,000.
I think it's worth having a discussion on this, so I'm going to say no to that. Hopefully the discussion can be brief, but I think it's worth just having a chat about it. Sure.
Agree. So, Mayor, I move that the motion be amended so far as would change $26,000 to $35,000.
Thank you. Do I have a seconder for that amendment? I'm going to seek some clarification from the Acting General Manager. Oh, Councillor Bastone, is that a seconder? Because otherwise I was going to second it from the Chair, and that's what I was going to ask the Acting General Manager whether I could do. Okay, so we're going to... Thank you. So we've got an amendment from Councillor Street, seconded by Councillor Bastone. Councillor Street, would you like to speak to the amendment?
Yeah, thank you, Mayor. Look, and I, as Councillor Cordova said, I think it's worth having the discussion, but I will be brief. This is a community sporting club that has had very little support from council in recallable history. They've asked us for $35,000. We've come back with a lower amount based on the idea that the project needs a contingency. I completely understand the reasoning for the calculation that's been made in the report. However, I do also note that the amount that was requested by the club was a $35,000 contribution to the project. Now, it may well be the case that is something of an ambit claim, but I do know that this is not a club that is going to let that $9,000 go to waste. They're going to use every cent of it to make sure that the facility is appropriate for use by members and by the community more broadly, as Councillor Cordova has so eloquently pointed out. The online booking system that they have established is fantastic for greater public access to the courts, and I know that is something that the club want and they're to be commended for that. So I would be fully supportive of giving them what they've requested, especially in light of the fact that we did approve a larger amount previously for a similar project. So on that basis, I've moved the amendment.
Beg your pardon. Sorry, I'm trying to save you all from my cat meowing, which is really embarrassing. Okay, further speakers, Councillor Gladrat.
Thank you. I've just got a question regarding the additional nine. Would that have to come out of this year's budget, this current budget?
Mr. Basham.
Through you, Mayor. Yes, the intent is that it would come out of council surplus this year's budget.
And do we indeed have a surplus of nine? Because we haven't quite decided yet, have we? We were discussing the next one. So do we have that nine available is what I'm trying to clarify.
Dr. Stevenson, can you give us some assistance here?
I believe we can accommodate the nine.
How so? Would be my next question, please. I just want to understand it.
On the basis of how we are currently tracking on this year's budget.
A little further extrapolation, if possible.
Well, you might recall the last month's financials showed that we are likely to end up with a surplus position at the end of this year. If you give me a moment, I can bring up the figures, but I don't have them directly in front of me right at the moment, but bear with me.
Okay, but if you're confident it can be accommodated, then I'd be happy to support the motion. But if I could please just get that clarified.
With all things budget, I would say, we are making our best guess because we still have some months to go. But as we are tracking at the moment, we are anticipating a small surplus, and I would think that $9,000 would be able to be accommodated in the same way that the 26 has been.
Okay, I feel like we've had a discussion about the 26 though, and so we were all comfortable with that, and so I just feel a bit nervous about committing another nine just on the fly.
In the scheme of our budget, $9,000 is, I would say, is not significant.
Okay, thank you.
Are there further speakers on the amendment? If not, I'll just say a few words. I'd like to support the amendment because I think that having met with the tennis club on a couple of occasions now, I appreciate that they have themselves as a club, through the hard work of their volunteers and players, have worked very, very hard over many years to make an investment in the facilities up there, and that's come through good financial management on their part, a lot of hard work as fundraising, and so they've really value added to the facility that is there. It's interesting to note that the things like the software to have the remote access is not being funded by the grant that has been provided. The grant is going towards predominantly upgrading the courts. So that the tennis club, and this is a fundamental part of the argument for additional funds for them, if we want that additional accessibility of the courts by members of the community through the software package, then we need to be able to provide them some additional funds to enable that to happen. And also they will have some additional costs of some fencing to also allow that to happen. So I fully support this amendment. I believe that the club has themselves demonstrated over a long period of time that they can operate efficiently and effectively, and they're very committed to their local community. They are certainly, it is a growing sport of tennis, and I think that this will really assist the club moving forward. And they have felt, as not a, I guess, not as a higher priority within the community as a tennis club, they don't feel like they've ranked as highly as soccer and football and other sports. So I think this is a small additional investment that I think we can feel confident will be managed effectively by the club and will benefit the wider community. Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. I wasn't going to speak, but I thought I'd just make a few comments. And I was very happy to support the motion initially, but even it's more happier for the tennis club with the fact that Councillor Street's, what he's proposed. I didn't think that we'd, you know, get this far, so that is really great. I was a member of the tennis club probably 7 years ago, can't quite fit that into my life anymore since being on council, and I do know that it is a great sport for so many different levels, and as a family we enjoyed a hit there for many years. It provided just a great sense of well-being and connection, and able to even meet friends there and inspire them to tennis. And as we all know, who didn't stay up late night watching tennis this year, and the lovely Ash Barty that so many people adore and children look up to, and has really inspired tennis, and the points that Councillor Reet made in regards to the accessibility. I think that is a really important to note as well. With the NDIS funding, this then provides another option for many people in our community to participate in. So, yeah, thank you, Councillor Street, for doing this, and I think we're going to have some very happy tennis faces.
Sorry, trying to save you from the cat. Again, Dr. Stevenson.
Thank you. Through you, Mayor, I have brought up the report from last council meeting with the financials to clarify Councillor Glaidwright's question. So we are tracking better than expected, but we are tracking to a small a deficit budget. But in the scheme of things, I stand by my statement, $9,000 is neither here nor there in the scheme of our overall budget. It will just mean we may have a slightly larger deficit, but we may not, because we're actually tracking ahead at the moment.
Thank you, Dr. Stevenson. Are there any further comments? If not, I will put the amended motion, which was moved by Councillor Street, seconded by Councillor Bastone. All those in favour of the amended motion, please raise your physical hands. I've got Councillors Fox, Cordova, Street, Bastone, Midgley, Reet and Westwood. Those against? And against is Councillor Glaidwright. The amended motion is passed. Sorry, Councillor Street, I didn't give you an opportunity to sum up before I put that, but I know you're a man of few words.
That's fine, I don't much mind, it passed.
Thank you. Thank you very much. We move now to biodiversity offset policy.
Point of order, Mayor, sorry.
Sorry.
We've passed the amendment, and I think you now need to go back to which becomes the substantive.
Of course, sorry. It's been a long night already, isn't it? And we're only up to page 35. Okay, so the amended motion now becomes the substantive motion. getting ahead of myself. So the recommendation is now that council provide an amount of $35,000 to the Kingston Tennis Club from its 21-22 operational budget as a contribution towards the cost of upgrading their court facilities. And that was moved by Councillor Street, seconded by Councillor Bastone. No, it was not. Here's the cat. It was moved by...
I made the motion.
And seconded by...
Fox, was it?
Councillor Midgley.
Oh, Councillor Midgley.
Councillor Midgley.
Sorry, I didn't write it down. Yes, so moved by Councillor Cordova, seconded by Councillor Midgley. Are there any further speakers on the substantive motion? No. Councillor Midgley, did you want to sum up? Councillor Cordova, did you sum up?
Thanks. I will sum up by saying that I'm pleased we've had this robust discussion. I'm really pleased we'll be able to deliver above and beyond. That's one of those general principles to under-promise and over-deliver, and I feel like tonight's a great example of that. I look forward to the tennis club, you know, making the most of this of these funds and utilising that grant to the fullest extent. And I also look forward to the general public becoming more involved with the tennis club, because the you know, the more we get involved in our sports precinct, the happier and healthier we'll all be. So all the very best. Thank you to all involved, and I look forward to seeing the fruits of this labour. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you, Councillor Cordova. I will now put the substantive motion, and that is that Council provide an amount of $35,000 to the Kingston Tennis Club from its 21-22 operational budget as a contribution towards the cost of upgrading their court facilities. All those in favour, please raise your hands. So that is Councillors Westwood, Cordova, Fox, Street, Gladewright, Bastone, Midgley and Reet. Those against? My motion is carried unanimously. Thank you very much. Now we move to page 37, Biodiversity Offset Policy, with a recommendation on page 42. Do I have a mover and a seconder, please? Moved for Councillor Fox and a seconder, Councillor Gladewright. Councillor Fox.
Thank you, Mayor. I think it is a very sensible motion that we increase the rates by CPI, because we haven't reviewed this particular contribution since 2016. So the biodiversity offset policy is very important that we actually levy the amount of money that we need to manage this fund, and that's been recommended by staff. I also note that the policy itself is going to be presented to Council in June, and that the staff are currently working on the review of the actual policy. But while we are implementing it, I think it's been quite obvious that we've noticed that other councils around the state and even overseas, interstate, have been charging a lot more for the loss of vegetation that's been occurring. So I think it's incumbent on us to keep up with the times and to keep up with our own expenses. So I think it's a good recommendation, and I recommend it. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Fox. Next, I've got Councillor Street, then Councillor Cordova. Councillor Street.
Thank you, Mayor. I broadly agree with the contribution that Councillor Fox has made. Council's going through a process of doing an in-depth review of the biodiversity offset policy currently. We haven't reassessed the offset amounts used under the current policy since 2016. Seems a very sensible stopgap between then and the full review coming to council to adjust those amounts to CPI, and I look forward to having a look at that review when it's available, and having a fulsome debate in the council chamber. But until that time, I think it's very sensible to go back and and review the current rates to CPI where that hasn't happened for a while.
Thank you very much. Councillor Street, Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor. I have a few questions, and my first question is Councillor Street's characterisation of this as kind of an interim measure before the June full assessment, is that a correct way of looking at it, that this is just kind of in a holding pattern until we get the full review in June?
We have Ms Quinn with us. Ms Quinn?
Thank you, Mayor. My understanding is that this report and the idea of adding CPI to the rates and a slight increase to the rate for tree removal would occur once the full biodiversity review has been brought to council and endorsed rather than as an interim measure.
Thank you. I think that's a really important point, actually, that we shouldn't really be looking at this as an interim measure. This is what you see is what you get, and this is what it's going to be if this motion passes, which is why I'm strongly advocating that we shouldn't actually pass this motion tonight. It's been a long night, and it's important that we don't let the late hour colour our decision-making. We really need to recognise that there's been an enormous outpouring by the community of dissatisfaction, actually, with the levels. The fact that people can take down a 70-year-old, very high conservation value tree for $500, and the fact that here we are tonight debating to keep that amount of money the same is firstly completely heartbreaking, but also it really does not, in my opinion, meet the community expectation. We have to remember why we have an offset policy in the first place, and it says it very clearly at page 37 that this is a hierarchy. There's a hierarchy, and an offset is a very last resort. We need to avoid, minimise, restore any kind of impact before we get to an offset. So when an offset finally does occur, it needs to be for a serious reason, and it needs to be a serious offset. And I don't think anybody would reasonably expect, when you see examples from other states of hundreds of thousands of dollars for a tree, there is not a single development in Kingborough that's taking place, not a single subdivision or ancillary dwelling for which there will be a profit of less than $500 in this day and age. Developers can certainly afford to. When they take down trees that are of very high conservation value, the council deserves to receive adequate remuneration for those trees coming down in order to disincentivize the use of this as just a cost of doing business. If I'm going to make $1 million off a property development, paying $500 a tree for something that takes 100 years to get the nesting hollows that will save the swift parrot or save the 40-spotted pardalote, I'm afraid to say that, in my opinion, it simply isn't good enough. But I do have a question, actually, about what is factored in. From my reading of this, what is factored in is the cost of planting 5 trees, assuming that some of them might not make it. But my question is, do we take into consideration, for example, the cost of breeding programs for the swift parrot, for which there's only 300 of them left on planet Earth? Is that cost factored into the biodiversity offset?
Sorry, Ms Quinn.
It's okay. Through you, Mayor, offsetting schemes are not about disincentives. So offsetting is about the true cost, if you like, or an estimated cost of finding those equivalent values somewhere else and securing them or protecting them in perpetuity. So where we would fund a swift parrot breeding program would be quite rare under Council's biodiversity offset policy, because research and those sort of recovery actions are only a very small proportion of how an offset is spent. So each individual offset is negotiated at the time, whether it's through the development application process. So if a developer particularly wanted to put money into a breeding program, then Council would consider that. But generally, that money is put into the pool and spent, those offsets are spent by the Kimber Environmental Fund. And as you're probably aware, most of it goes into private reserves because that is the best value for money. So it's really important to remember that biodiversity offsets the rate needs to be set so that council can find those equivalent rates, because the Kingborough Environmental Fund is sort of working as a third party, if you like, between the developer and the offset site, so we're finding the offset for them.
Thank you very much, Ms. Quinn, for that explanation. And through you, Mayor, I'll just reiterate the point, I guess, that where we have factored in inflation in this model, what we haven't actually factored in is the future inflation. So what we're doing is we're playing catch up because we haven't increased the rate in, you know, a decade or whatever it is since 2016. But let me make the point that when you plant a tree that takes 70 years to get nesting hollows, I'll just point out that the price of fuel in Australia in 1978 was 21 cents per litre. And now it's a lot more than 21 cents per litre. So the cost of maintaining a tree, and it says in this report that every 5 years you need to do your tree maintenance and you need to make sure that out of those five trees that they actually grow, it's going to be in 2070, by the time that these trees get big enough to have nesting hollows, to adequately replace the trees that were lost, it will be more like $5,000 for the same cost of maintenance as it is today. So I feel like this model that we're using is currently only ever playing catch-up, and it's a struggle every time for us to catch up. And that's why I think it's the wrong way. We're not actually factoring in the true cost of these things. And really, if we were looking at donut economics, or if we were looking at a triple bottom line, we would actually assess the price of these things much higher than we currently do. I think it's a disservice not just to the biodiversity, of which we're in a biodiversity emergency right now. It's not just a disservice to the animals and plants of Kingborough to keep this rate so low. But it's also a disservice to the community at large, who expressed very clearly when it came to the tree bylaws, and every single time we do a consultation, even about the Kingston CBD, people always express the value of trees in Kingborough. We care deeply about trees, and $500 when people are making millions off development just simply doesn't meet the community expectation. I think it will be a great tragedy if we have to wait until later on to finally fix this problem. And I really implore my colleagues to recognise the true value of our environment and recognise the expectation that exists within the community. And please do not vote for this. It is completely inadequate that people can take down 100-year-old trees and just pay $500. We'll make it a cost of doing business. We've already lost thousands upon thousands of trees in this municipality because of this, failure of us councillors to really step up and increase the biodiversity offsets. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you. I've got Councillor Glade right next.
Thank you. I just wanted to know, at 4.11 it says it is recommended that the financial offset rates are increased to include the consumer price index. So I was just wondering why they haven't been applied.
Ms. Quinn.
Thank you, Mayor. Thank you for the question. So it is suggested that the rates be applied. They haven't been applied because we haven't reviewed the policy since 2016, so there's not an automatic process where the offset rates are increased every year. They're only reviewed every time the policy is actually reviewed.
But there's no change for the very high conservation tree.
Through you, Mayor, they're changed to the increase is $570, so from $500 to $570.
So I'm sorry, I'm getting really confused. Where it says proposed rate, that's not actually the proposed rate?
Through you, Mayor, sorry, Councillor Glade, right, I can see your confusion. Now you've pointed that out. So the proposed rate is actually the new rate plus CPI. So it would be $570. That's the proposed rate for a very high conservation value tree.
Okay, so the rates that we would be approving is 570 up from 500 and 340 up from 250. So there is indeed an increase.
Correct.
Okay, thank you. I'm happy to support that.
Thank you. Do I have any further speakers? Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, sir. I was just finding my little hand.
Thank you. I do support what Councillor Cordova has shared in his debate, but I also do understand the predicament that the council officers sit in regards to this, and I understand that they are big advocates for our local environment and huge advocates for protecting our high conservation trees within our municipality. I understand in regards to the mitigation hierarchy that avoid and minimise is a key area that they work towards when applications come across the desk, when situations arise in regards to residents wanting to, you know, consider the white gums or other high conservation species that are causing problems to them. And I've had many conversations with them, so I know they are very huge advocates in this space. But I also feel like I want to quote the Lorax, you know, if everyone's read the Dr. Seuss, the Lorax, but, you know, speaking for the trees. It is really a minimal amount for a 70-year-old tree that contains so many values. If only we could look at those, if only the offset could look at all the different values that that tree holds, and each value then becomes a price, that would be completely ideal. But I understand that's a principle. I understand we've got something that we're working towards, and that some councils, if I'm correct, through you, Mayor, that some councils don't even have an offset program. Am I correct in asking that question?
When?
Through you, Mayor, you're absolutely correct. So Kingborough Council is a leader in biodiversity offsetting in local government. The Huon Valley Council have recently, very recently, developed and endorsed a biodiversity offset policy, which is similar to Kingborough's. And some of the other councils offset occasionally, but they certainly don't have the strategy and policy that we have behind our offsetting.
Mm. Thank you. And for those councils that do, not the Huon Valley and other perhaps Tasmanian ones, but interstate, like, do we have any other examples through you, Mayor, Ms Quinn, that you would say that would be more aspirational, say, than perhaps what we are presented with tonight?
Ms Quinn.
Through you, Mayor, thank you for the question. There are the full range of rates out there from the research that I did. So our rates are probably sitting there somewhere in the middle, and we did consider very carefully whether we should increase the rates. There's obviously a lot of things to consider when doing that. And the main thing that we have considered in setting our rates is what is the true cost of finding, of protecting or restoring an equivalent value. And we're happy at this point that we can... There is a time lag, which Councillor Cordova and others are speaking to, and that is difficult to quantify and to cost. But at the moment, we are happy that through the example of the years we've had with the fund, that we are able to find equivalent values and protect equivalent values in the Kingborough municipality. When we do the full review, we could certainly look at and provide information about other councils across Australia.
That would be really helpful. Thank you, Ms Quinn. So, and I guess that time lag as well. So in some extra reading that I did, some really interesting videos that I found online as well in regards to offsets, and understanding that it is very complicated. It is that time lag in regards to then the removal of the tree, and then the time lag with the funds sit in there, and then the actual replanting of trees. Like, how is Kingborough tracking in that, and how can we improve the lag, I guess, in regards to then going back to restoration?
Through you, Mayor, we've had, as you may be familiar, we've had quite a delay. So when the fund, when we first started offsetting, we decided that it would be better to pool resources into the fund for many years to allow us then to be much more efficient with how we spend those offsets through the fund. So we had quite a long time delay. In the last 3 years, we've implemented a significant proportion of the fund. We've got 240 hectares of new reserves on private land and an awful lot of revegetation in the ground, mostly on council land, as that has the highest level of protection going into the future. So the fund's tracking really well. And going forward now, given that the fund is set up, we have a project manager for the fund, those delays will just be completely shortened from what they were in those original years when we wanted to allow that to build up, because we've got all of those efficiencies set up now on the processes and practices. In terms of time lag, one of the important things that we're going to implement in terms of individual tree loss is to use funds to do a nest box program, because one of the main values that's lost from a very old mature tree is that hollow bearing habitat, because it takes so long for trees to develop hollows, and hollows are one of the most the rarest resources that have, and it's what drives a lot of species towards extinction in Tasmania. So we're going to develop a nest box program that, whilst instead of only putting new trees and vegetation in the ground, that will also install nest boxes and then monitor those nest boxes every year. So a lot of those will probably be on private land, because we want them to be really close to the best quality habitat for both, mostly it'll be for the swift parrot and the 40-spotted pardaloge.
Good to know. And just in regards to grassland, do we see any offset policies that incorporate grasslands? So impact on grasslands and removal of grasslands?
Through you, Mayor. The Kingra municipality and the bioregions that occur in Kingra don't have a lot of natural grassland. We do have Themeda or kangaroo grassland, but mostly it's because trees have been taken off it. So native grasslands are most common through the Midlands of Tasmania, and then alpine grasslands as well. So we haven't had an offset for native grasslands that I can recall, because they're generally not cleared through development.
Thank you. So it would be good to have an understanding of what the high and what the low is in regards to other council offset policies. So I feel like tonight I'm not quite sure if I can support this, as I don't have that broad picture of what the high aim could be. And as Councillor Cordova says, to put that $570 on a 70-year-old tree, understanding, Ms. Quinn, where you've come to with this, that's just my predicament around whether I can support this as the actual amount going forward. And as you stated before, that then this would be the amount going forward that we would decide on in June. So there's no way that this could be changed when it comes to the June, or this is what it, and again, can I just get that understanding? This is what is set now. This is what will be set as recommended further.
Ms. Quinn.
Through you, Mayor, I see this, because it is a response to the notice of motion from the Mayor, I see this as a recommendation. The policy still needs to go to technical review. We want to do that with ecological experts who actually use and have been implementing the policy since 2016 to get some really good feedback about how it's working. And we also need to go to community consultation as per the notice of motion. So I see it as a recommendation, and depending on the outcomes of that consultation, we could review that.
Great. Thank you so much for the clarification.
Thank you. I've got Councillor Bastone and then Councillor Cordova. Councillor Bastone.
Thank you, Mayor. I just want to ask Ms. Quinn, at the moment, a high conservation tree is worth half of what a very high conservation tree is. That's the current rate we work on at the moment. And yet, in the recommendation, this is not the case. Surely, at the very minimum, a very high conservation tree should again be double the high conservation tree, which would make it 680 at the very minimum. And I feel it should be a lot more than that. But at the very bare minimum, should it be 680?
Ms. Quinn.
Through you, Mayor. Thank you, Councillor Bastone. The rates are both up to 500 and up to 250, so there is a range there. So it's not always strictly double, although we often do, as you would know, through planning applications, we do often apply 500. It doesn't, I guess, coming back to the equivalence, and perhaps this isn't how we originally thought about setting these rates, is that it doesn't cost twice as much to put in the ground a high conservation value tree. It does, however, take longer for it to get to a high conservation value tree in terms of the size. So I guess it's very difficult to value, and there are people who try to value what that is in monetary terms, the difference between a very large tree and a moderate-sized tree, if you like. So from council's point of view, in terms of putting those values back, for the difference between 250 and 500, we can actually not only put the five trees in the ground and look after them, but we can also put a nest box on those very high conservation value trees. So that's the difference in costing between what is currently now 250 and 500. We also used 250 under the bylaw when we had the bylaw for private land, because something else that people raise with offsets is sometimes when you're doing a large development, you're actually making a lot of money out of clearing that vegetation or removing those trees. And under the bylaw, it's more often that someone is removing a tree that perhaps they have really valued and it's become unsafe, or someone moves in and they decide they want to do something else with that space. So they're not making money out of removing that tree. So there was also a sort of an ethical, if you like, consideration about what are people gaining. So 500 is the rate for trees that is commonly applied through the planning scheme for very high conservation value trees, whereas in the bylaw in the past we've set it at 250, acknowledging that there isn't a large financial gain being made in that situation.
So would it be... is it not possible to have a varying rate then? So a different rate for a developer to someone who wants to take a tree down in their own yard for safety reasons, as you said.
Through you, Mayor, yes, it is. I mean, council can set their rates how you like, and it does say up to 500 and up to 250, or it would say the same thing, I would imagine, going forward with the new rates. So we can do that if you like. Again, coming back to the idea, so in the report it actually provided a table of some different calculation methods, and some of those methods do relate to the value of the project or the value of the land. And the reason that in the literature they're generally not supported, those methods, is because it's, again, not about the true cost of achieving that offset, of actually putting the growing the trees to replace what is lost. So yes, it is possible. It's just not something. It's not how our current policy, the method we currently use.
Thank you.
Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor. I'll squidge my questions together for brevity. But my first question is it true that you still have to pay offsets even if a tree is removed for safety reasons? Is that true?
Ms. Quinn.
Through you, Mayor, yes it is, because the loss still occurs. So the tree, if it was a tree application, for example, in the past under a bylaw, that tree is dangerous, and if an arborist recommends that risk is unacceptable, the tree is approved to be taken down, but the loss still occurs. The biodiversity loss still occurs.
Thank you. My next question is that why can't the offset price include ecosystem services? And I'll package this question together. Why haven't we considered the Melbourne Tree Valuation Tool and iTree and things like that? The main thrust is why can't we include ecosystem services as part of the cost of regrowing these trees?
Ms. Quinn.
Through you, Mayor. We have considered and council can consider that. We can provide more advice on that if required on how that works. You might be familiar with the some of those calculation methods come out with very high numbers. So for people who, again, might be applying to council to remove a tree in their backyard or two or three trees on a 5-acre property or something, you know, you'd be up for hundreds of thousands of dollars. And there is a balance which we often talk about finding that balance between protecting our environment, but also being realistic about what people can afford and what policies are likely to be supported by the community going forward.
Thank you. Is it true that we could just add a general manager discretion so that in the cases where somebody really can't afford it and they're just a small time, so that we can treat those people differently than we treat, say, a developer who's doing 100 houses at once with millions of dollars of profit? Is that true? We can add a general manager discretion?
Ms. Quinn.
Through you, Mayor, I believe you could do that if that's what council would like to do.
Thank you. And so I'm nearly done here. I think it's my calculation, and the question is, am I wrong about this? But my calculation is that in order for us to have achieved nearly $1 million in our Kingborough Environmental Fund, that necessarily required the removal of between 2,000 and 4,000 high and very high conservation value trees. That's how we got to that figure in the first place. It sounds like a lot of money, which is great, but it came off the back or off the trunk rather of 2,000 to 4,000 high conservation value trees. Is that true?
Ms. Quinn.
Through you, Mayor, no, that's not true, thankfully. You need to remember that it's the $1 million is actually mostly made up from vegetation loss through subdivision or housing development, which is at $12,000, a rate of $12,000 a hectare.
Perfect. Yeah, thank you for clarifying
that. And the ratios that are then applied to that depending on the conditions. So there's also ratios that are applied to those rates which are within the policy.
Thank you so much, Ms. Quinn. That's a really important point to clarify. What about the cost of, so we know that this has been calculated on the cost of planting the tree, but what about the cost of the wheelbarrow, the gloves, the spade and the ladder to put up the nest box? Who's paying for those? So I guess my question is, how is it possible that the price of replacing a 100-year-old tree can be cheaper than the average weekly rent for a two-bedroom unit in Hobart? How can that be true?
Ms. Quinn, although I think that question is kind of, if we're in a court of law, I'd say seeking an opinion.
I'll reframe the question, Mayor. The tools that are used by our staff to maintain these trees, the ladder, the equipment, the vehicles, the spade and the gloves, that costs more than $500. If I went to Bunnings tomorrow, it would cost me a whole lot more than $500 to deal with a tree that size over the next 70 years. So how are we making up? I'm trying to get to the bottom of why is it so cheap?
Through you, Mayor, it is cheap because it's a pooling of resources. So that's what we were able to achieve under the fund. So when we do a revegetation site on council land, we are putting in hundreds of trees, if not thousands, where we can. So we achieve efficiency through large sites, not putting in individual trees. Large sites, of course, are also a lot more resilient to impact, a lot easier and cheaper to maintain. And the rates that we have put there are actually the true cost because we do it so often. So we often use contractors to both construct and install nest boxes and potentially to monitor them as well. So those are the rates that we know that they're achievable. So it's really about the efficiencies of the size of the revegetation sites and the amount of nest boxes going up at once.
Thank you, Ms. Quinn. And so through you, Mayor, my final question is just to ask the mover and seconder to consider the following amendment, which is to duplicate the table that exists at 4.11, except to title it developer rates, and to completely copy it except add a zero to all of the figures in the proposed rate. So for developer rates, a very high conservation value tree would be up to 5,000. A high conservation value tree would be up to 3,000. So we're literally duplicating that table for developers, and the definition of developers can be organised in due course, but that's the amendment that I'm seeking.
Can I just seek some clarification, though, because you're saying it can be developed in due course, the definition of developer, but we can't debate an amendment for something that we don't know what we're actually debating, so you need to be able to clarify for us now what a developer would be.
So a developer would be as defined by, let's define it right now. So general manager's discretion. So the general manager would determine what counts as a developer and what counts as not a developer. So not a developer would pay the rates as you see them at 4.11 and a developer, at the discretion of the general manager, would pay up to 10 times more?
I think legally we might be on very difficult ground there. Would the acting general manager like to make a comment?
Yes, I'd like to note that under our planning system, a developer is anyone who submits a development application. So that can be individual mum and dad property owners, not just people who are doing large-scale development. So I think that would be a very difficult and flawed definition. I apologize, Councillor Cordova. I don't think it works.
In that case, I could see Councillor Midgley might have a better wording than me, but if not, I've got a secondary wording to instead. Okay, so in that case, my amendment is to just add zeros to the proposed, add 1 zero to the proposed rate in table 4.11. So that's my amendment, is to change the recommendation from the proposed rate of 500 to 5,000 and from the proposed rate of up to 300 to up to 3,000. That's my amendment.
Is there a seconder for that amendment? Seconded by Councillor Midgley.
And that would therefore include... Sorry.
Do you like to speak to the amendment, Councillor Cordova?
Thank you, Mayor. So to be clear, the amendment is basically to multiply by 10 the proposed rates at 4.11, which would include, therefore, high and moderate priority biodiversity value going up to $130,650 per hectare. There is actually precedent for this, certainly in the ACT and in Victoria. There are many an occasion where, in fact, you know, taking down the wrong tree in New South Wales can see you pay $1.1 million. So I listed in a workshop not long ago all of the various rates in places, in jurisdictions on the mainland, where this is completely within the realm of possibility for what people charge. And the reason for that is that it properly factors in the ecosystem services that trees provide and deals with that time lag problem. That in fact, if we were to adequately add inflation to the cost of planting and maintaining a tree over the course of 70 or 100 years, my proposal is a much more realistic valuation. And you can see that replicated with the Melbourne Tree Valuation Tool or any number of other tools out there. It's not too much to expect that where somebody, just like in our financial hardship clauses for everything else, if somebody's facing financial hardship and they can't pay, then there are always discretions built into the mix. We can see that with our rates hardship policies and various policies as well. So I know that it is possible to create a scheme in which somebody who to pay $5,000 but has to take a tree down for safety won't have to pay $5,000. But for a giant developer who's making tens of millions of dollars off a project, they will have to pay that rate. So I think this is eminently sensible. It fits in line with community expectations, and it actually is a more realistic measure of... I think something that is important to note is that whilst we heard that it is indeed very difficult to value trees, but I would posit that it is very easy to undervalue trees. And in our municipality, we've been undervaluing our trees for far too long, and this amendment goes some way to remedying that fact. Thank you, Matt.
Thank you, Councillor Cordova. I've got, so we're speaking to the amendment. I've got Councillor Street, then Councillor Fox.
Thank you, Mayor. I'll be brief. Essentially, the amendment is asking us to ignore the qualified advice that we've received on this topic, and I won't be supporting it. It would turn the policy into a biodiversity penalty policy rather than a biodiversity offset policy, which is clearly not the intention. And if Councillor Cordova wants to pursue such a policy, then he should do so outside the boundaries of the biodiversity offset policy.
Thank you, Councillor Street. Councillor Fox.
Thank you. I'll be brief too. I support what Councillor Street's just said. I feel that Ms Quinn's comments were that we need to have a balance, we need to be realistic, and we need to have community support, and I don't think we would get community support. I know that this council was the first council in Tasmania to introduce an offset policy in 2003. At the time, I was horrified at the concept, and I still am horrified at the amount that we're only charging. But that is what the community will bear, And until we get a report from our professional staff, and note that this is also endorsed by Mr. John Dool, that we need to adhere to the staff's recommendation. I think Ms. Quinn has put it very well, has explained all the answers very nicely, and I do feel we should stand by the recommendation that was made by our staff. It isn't an easy decision. I know that, I mean, to say that we don't value trees is not really the issue. The issue is, what can we do with the money? How can we spend it wisely? And how can we move forward from the fact that we could actually not charge anything and many councils charge nothing? But at least we're trying to get something back from the loss of the vegetation and the magnificent trees that are coming down. And we're trying to protect the habitat and trying to find locations which are sustainable and which can achieve better outcomes in the future. So I suspect I would not support the amendment. Thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Fox, now I assume that's everyone. I'm going to put the amendment. Look, just before I do, just very briefly, because I'm very conscious of the time and I know that Councillor Westwood is feeling quite unwell and would like to go after this motion has been put. I appreciate the intent with which Councillor Cordova is putting his amendment forward, and I think that most of us here do that, and certainly I put this motion forward because we hadn't had any change in the offset rate since 2016, and I believe that we should review it. But I don't feel like, given the expertise that we've got available to us with Ms. Quinn and the responses that she has provided, we can't just pull a figure out of the air with no rationale behind it. We have another opportunity in the future when the policy is reviewed by the experts, but let's not try right now to either have my cat meow at me or to make a policy on the fly when we haven't got the full information. I think what alarms me is the answer to the question before, that if a tree is unsafe and has to be removed because it's recommended by an arborist, I think it would be very, very unfair to expect somebody to pay $5,000 to have an unsafe, very high conservation tree removed from their property, and that's effectively what this amendment would be doing. So I think we'd be getting into some very dangerous ground there. So I don't support, I support the intent of what Councillor Cordova is trying to do, because certainly there was an intent behind me bringing this to see whether we needed to review the current rates. This substantive motion does do that. It does provide additional offsets by increasing the CPI by 13% over the period. So I don't support this and would like to see the substantive motion moved. So, Councillor Cordova, did you want to sum up?
I think your cat has summed up perfectly for me. Thank you.
I'm so sorry about my cat tonight. She just by way of explanation, she's going to the vet tomorrow, and I think she's got to be clicked and have stuff done, and I think she senses it, so she's become very clingy and needy tonight. So I will put the amendment as moved by Councillor Cordova and seconded by Councillor Midgley. All those in favour of the amendment is Councillors Cordova, Fox and in favour of the amendments is Councillors Cordova, just Councillor Cordova, okay, thank you. Against the amendment is Councillors Fox, Bastone, Gladewright, Midgley, Street and Westwood. The amendment is lost, so we're back on the substantive motion. Does anybody else wish to speak on the substantive motion? If not, I will ask Councillor Fox if she'd like to sum up.
Yes, thank you. I think it's been a really interesting discussion, and I do appreciate Councillor Cordova's amendment, because it has raised issues that we're all concerned about. But at the end of the day, I think this is a practical, realistic compromise, and I think it's wise for us to move forward. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Fox. I'll put the recommendation. It's as printed on page 42 of the agenda. It was moved by Councillor Fox and seconded by Councillor Glade-Wright. All those in favour, please raise your hands. It's Councillors Fox, Bastone, Glade-Wright, Street, Midgley, Reet and Westwood. Those against? Councillor Cordova. The motion is carried. We turn now to page 43. It's a request from Clarence City Council to amend the Southern Tasmanian Regional Land Use Strategy with a recommendation on page 46. I'm looking for a mover and a seconder. I've got a mover in Councillor Street and a seconder in Councillor Fox. Councillor Street.
Thank you, Mayor. Look, briefly, I'll take the opportunity to get on my Southern Tasmanian Regional Land Use Strategy soapbox and remind everybody how desperately out of date it is and how desperately it needs to be reviewed. And please, for goodness sake, can it happen soon? It's not council's responsibility alone. It is the state government's responsibility primarily. Please, can it happen soon? In saying that, look, I'm glad that we have reverted back to our previous position on matters such as this, or seemingly we have, which is that we're not going to stand in the way of another municipality seeking to amend the Southern Tasmanian Regional Land Use Strategy, albeit we have expressed our concerns around the lack of detail, which I think are entirely reasonable and well-founded, but I still don't believe philosophically that it's Canberra's place to stand in the way of Clarence's requested amendment where it doesn't have a direct impact on Canberra, and we shouldn't stand in the way of it going to the Planning Commission for assessment and a decision by the Planning Commission, which is where these matters need to be dealt with.
Thank you, Councillor Street. I've got a whole raft of hands going up. Just before calling on the next speaker, can I just indicate that the Deputy Mayor, Councillor Westwood, has left the meeting at the end of that previous vote because she is unwell, and I think she's done very well to stay for as long as she did. So Councillor Glade-Wright next, then Councillor Bastone, then Councillor Fox. Councillor Glade-Wright.
Thank you. Look, I can't support this. I'm sorry. Councillor Street raised a really, really important thing here. The Regional Land Use Strategy actually hasn't been reviewed for 11 years, and it says that the Minister must keep all regional land use strategies under regular and periodic review. So I think we really need to do some harder lobbying to get that review in order. Given that that's so out of date, I just can't support a request to amend the urban growth boundary if we don't have that strategic plan in place. I think all decisions shouldn't just be made ad hoc like this is trying to do, and that it's actually supported by really solid strategic planning. And while that's so out of date, I just don't think that this is a wise decision. So I'm really feeling like we need to do some more lobbying, perhaps, but that's a matter for another time. But, yeah, for me, I just cannot support this without really solid strategic plan behind a decision. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Councillor Glade-Wright. Councillor Bastone, then Councillor Fox.
Oh, thank you. Through you, Mayor, I think the question probably is for Dr. Stevenson. But did we not refuse Brighton Council's request to amend their regional land use about 2 months ago?
You're testing my memory. We've certainly passed some. We've had a number of these requests. We've had Hobart, we've had Glenorchy, and I think we've had a previous one from Clarence, even from memory. Mm-hmm. The strategic planning officers do discuss this. They are in total agreement, as are the councils, that the regional land use strategy needs review. There are a number of requirements in relation to data that needs to be provided to make this decision by the Tasmanian Planning Commission, and previously we have received that from the council requesting a decision. We did not get that level of detail from Clarence, but do understand that it's a bit chicken and egg, because it's a lot of work to do if you then don't get the support of councils. So they're sort of throwing out themselves on our mercy to an extent. They will still have to do the work, but they didn't want to do the work if they weren't going to get the support anyway. So the strategic planners do discuss these. Our strategic planner has recommended that we provide the in-principle support, and that is because it still does have to go through a full process with the Planning Commission, who will have to consider all those factors about that they have to do about the master planning, the impact on the demand and supply analysis and all those things. So we feel fairly comfortable that even if we say yes, there is a lot of work to be done, and those matters will be given full consideration by the Planning Commission.
Okay, but you don't remember us refusing Brighton's?
We
thought that something could be done overall, you know, that it would...
Yes. I do believe we did with one. I have to say it made no difference. They were still able to progress it through to the Planning Commission.
Okay, so it wouldn't matter if we said no to Clarence, then they can still progress it?
Yes. It may have a marginal influence on the Planning Commission, but I would suspect it's not significant.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. We've now got, I've still got Councillor Glaidwright's hand up. No, Councillor Fox, and then Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor. I'm pleased that Dr. Stevenson explained the situation to us in terms of it being in principle only. We do get another bite of the cherry, and obviously the detail that's been provided by the Clarence Council is pretty sketchy, but we are providing in principle support. So I guess what looking at the map on the previous page makes me realise that this is a significant view from Kingborough, that we'll be looking at the Druthy Point end, and the skyline is very valuable to, and always has been, to Kingborough. And I know that there is proposal to creep quite close to that skyline, and I do think it's important as a council that we maintain that we want to keep that skyline if at all possible, and not go over the top of this peninsula. And of course, it has got significant landscape and view benefits to our community as well as Hobart. That goes back a long way in history. We do, under the planning scheme, I don't think we can provide skyline protection, but it's always been something that's been highly desirable to many planning authorities. So, and I think it'll come back to us with further detail, and we, as far as I can remember, we haven't refused, but there might have been one that slipped through in the past, and if they ask, we should at least get them to consider it. So, thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Fox. Councillor Cordova. And just before Councillor Cordova speaks, I'm advised by the Acting General Manager that we did approve Brighton.
That's important. Okay. Thank you, Matt. And my contribution, brief though it will be, is actually to speak against at this stage, unless I can be convinced. My main reason probably rests with 4.7 on page 45. I feel like here's what it says, is while the request by Clarence indicates the amendment to the UGB may be reasonable to address current residential land supply, at a local level, the potential impacts on the growth management strategies of the Strelis and available land supply across the region have not been modelled. The proposal may therefore require additional modelling analysis to demonstrate compliance with the RLUS1 guideline. In other words, we're flying blind here. We don't know the impacts on our municipality, and I feel it would be remiss of us to just allow something to go through in an ad hoc way when we don't know what the impacts will be. Those impacts have not been modelled. And I actually took the liberty of reading the 7 pages of the RLUS number 1 information sheet, and it says clearly in the background, the regional land use strategy set out the key agreed strategic directions for the region over a medium to long term, and importantly, before certifying and publicly exhibiting a draft planning scheme amendment, a local council acting as a planning authority needs to be satisfied that the draft amendment is consistent with the relevant regional land use strategy. Are we satisfied? Any amendment to a regional land use strategy that is required by an individual or a planning authority would need to be supported by documentation that identified and justified the need for the amendment. Moreover, as the regional land use strategies are a regional plan, it would require the general support from all councils in the region. It says in the report that we've been provided that the key components of this proposal have not actually been provided to Kingborough, and so we don't know what the downriver issues will be. And I think it's important that we actually take a stand at some point to really ignite the momentum behind the state government. And perhaps now that we have a new premier in the offing, maybe that will happen, to get an update of this Strelis as soon as possible, because we've been waiting too long for it. And in fact, by allowing ad hoc developments like this, and this is a very significant undertaking, this Skylands development is enormous. And whilst I fully acknowledge the need for an urgent reform in our housing to meet the needs of the housing crisis, to diminish the chaos being caused by the housing crisis, this is not good planning. By flying blind like this, by not having the right amount of information, and by not having an updated regional land use strategy, this is not the way to develop a greater Hobart. So I think it's important we draw a line in the sand and we say that actually we're done with these ad hoc developments that might impact our municipality. We don't know. There's no modelling and no analysis. We're done. We want the state government to rapidly review and update that regional land use strategy so that we can look at these things with some clarity. So that's why I'll be voting against. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you, Councillor Cordova. Are there any further comments? If not, I will put the motion. It was moved by Councillor Street, and I didn't write down who seconded the motion. Councillor Fox. Okay. So it's moved by Councillor Street, seconded by Councillor Fox. Recommendation as printed on page 46. All those in favour of the motion? We've got Councillors Street and Fox. Those against, please raise your hands. Is Councillors Bladewright, Cordova, Midgley, Reet, Councillor Bastone, I'm not sure whether you are there. Oh, and Councillor Bastone is also voting. The motion is lost. We turn now to page 47. There is light at the end of the tunnel, people. Page 47, the communications and engagement policy with a recommendation on page 49. I'm looking for a mover and a seconder, please. Anyone? Thank you. Councillor Cordova. Second to Councillor Gladewright. Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, ma'am. We have before us the communications and engagement policy. Basically, there are some minor updates, but it's still a really crucial policy. And what is important about it is the annual action plan and the communications and engagement policy framework. And whilst I do have a couple of questions, which, again, I'll be brief with, and a couple of nitpicking points, I think overall the most important thing that we can take from this policy really exists within the first few lines of the policy statement, because this underpins the entire reason why council communicates and engages with the public in general, and it actually tells a story about what role councillors have to facilitate that engagement for the benefit of our community. So I'll read out the most important points as I see them, and then I'll ask some brief questions. Council acknowledges that effective communication and engagement are essential foundations of a strong community and promote active citizenry, participation, and a healthy democracy. Council also recognises that good communication and engagement underpins our democratic system of government. So what this policy seeks to do is to initiate that exchange of ideas, and it actually has a very clear framework that if you turn through to, it's probably in and around page 70 and 80, the hierarchy and the reasons why and where we engage, and whether or not it's for information and consultation or whether it's to learn something from the community, and whether or not that impacts on our whether or not we're essentially asking for, if we empower the community, then they are actually making the decision with us, or whether it's a consultation, like, we're building this road here, so you need to know when there'll be traffic disruptions. So all of that is outlined in what is a very robust policy. My one concern, which I might not even ask a question on, I'll just point out that in the objective, we've now made the addition of adding in the term ratepayers. So I'm now looking at page 51 of the track changes. Under objective 3.1, the 1, 2, 3, 4, the fifth dot point down says use a variety of methods to communicate and to provide information in formats that accommodate the needs of all residents and consumers, and we've added in the term ratepayers. I wanted to make the point that as it says in our rates policy, as it says in the Local Government Act, there is this myth that when you pay your rates, you're paying for a specific fee or service, and therefore if you don't use that fee or service, you shouldn't pay rates. And that's a myth. It's not a fee for service. We are here to deliver services to everybody in our municipality. That's the residents, that's the visitors, that's the people on holiday here. We as a council deliver services to anybody, irrespective of whether they pay rates or not. So I just wanted to make the point that when we're communicating and engaging, it actually doesn't matter whether you're a renter or whether you're a landlord. We're engaging with you to make sure that you understand what the council is providing, and also have that iterative policy where we are able to take information and deliver those. So I just wanted to make that point, and also to really emphasise the importance of trying to make these policies as to use as simple language as possible. So I've noticed that we've kind of included phrases like the provision of, where instead we could have used, you know, potentially more simple language. So there are some nitpicking points like that, but overall I would just say that one of the key issues here also is that now the delegation has moved in 4.2 under the scope, the general manager and the director of environment, development and community services will be accountable and responsible for the review and promotion of the policy. But now all councillors and council employees are responsible for the implementation of the policy. So that's probably enough for me for now, except to thank everybody for organising and implementing what is a very robust system. And I await to hear the other councillors' contribution before I ask any questions. Thank you, and I commend the motion.
Thank you. Do I have any further speakers? Councillor Midgley and then Gladright.
Thank you, Mayor. And thank you. Who the author of the report was, Mr. Stevenson, I think. Sorry, I can't remember that. I haven't got it up there. I've just got so many things going on. It's like hard to, and I have got my agenda printed out, so I'm trying to manage Teams and look at my agenda is a bit tricky. So it is a really important document. It is a really important role for council, and from our Main Street Kingston, we can understand significant importance of engagement. Just a couple of things, and sorry, Dr. Stevenson, that I didn't raise this with you. I was sidetracked looking at some other matters on the agenda tonight. But in regards to some of the biggest matters around engagement is then how we report back to the community. And how do you feel, is the policy strengthened enough in regards to that reporting back to the community and actually being that accountable to the community in regards to the process that we're actually going about that?
Dr. Stevenson.
Through you, Mayor. In reviewing the policy, I've tried to tidy the language rather than substantially change the intent, because I felt the intent was sound as council approved when it was originally endorsed. And I've just tried to reflect also that we're in a different point. That was introducing a policy. Now we're continuing to consolidate and grow on that policy. So I think 6.8, which refers to reporting, is still valid. I think the engagement framework, the information is still relevant. The bit that councils don't have before them, which is referenced in those documents, is the tools that we provide to our staff to help them plan. And we actually, I've just today engaged some support to have an update of our templates, move them into guided online fillable forms so that it makes it much easier for staff for whom engagement is not their bread and butter to incorporate it within their day-to-day project management. So I think it's those sorts of practical solutions which will help embed the intent of the policy as we go along. And the other piece of work that we'll do, which is part of our delivery for the year ahead, is to deliver then training on how to use those tools and to think about how we do engagement.
Great. Thank you very much, Dr. Stevenson. I was wondering about the tools and the implementation and the broad context, I guess, that they can be applied. And also, I think it's the IPA2 training that I'm sure staff be, I guess, key engagement staff will be participating in some other engagement knowledge in regards to that, I guess, and implementing that. So that's good to know. When Councillor Cordova just stated that as councillors we also have that responsibility in regards to implementation of this, like, what do you see as the different parties' roles in regards to how we oversee this implementation? Like some, yeah. So for example, and the reason why I'm asking that is I went through the Geelong Community Engagement Strategy and they very articulated what actual each person's role is in regards to implementation around that.
That line was as per the original policy, but I feel quite clear in my mind what it means, because if you look at the objectives of the policy, they include things like listening to Kingborough's residents and encouraging our residents and ratepayers to participate, and I definitely see that councillors have an absolutely vital role in that, which is why it's there for an all-inclusive responsibility in terms of implementing the communications and engagement policy. Within the framework, there are some more specific references. For example, there's a table which is around the roles, communication roles, which clearly says the mayor is the spokesperson. So there are some differences within the framework, but I do think in terms of the broad policy intent and the objectives of the policy, that is should be owned by everyone.
Thanks so much.
Thank you, Councillor Midgley. Councillor Gladrat.
Thank you. Just a very short contribution. I just wanted to sing the praises of our communications and engagement staff at the moment. They do a fantastic job and I'm really proud of the amount that we do, and I'm aware that Mrs. Adams, I'm not sure, Ms. Adams, does a really fantastic job holding up the communication sides of things. So I just wanted to add that in there. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Gladwright. I'm sure we all echo those comments. Lots of nodding, see. Nodding, yes. Any further speakers? Because I just had a couple of small things, and I'm very conscious of how late it is, so I'm not going to hold us up. I did find a couple of sort of like minor typo amendments, but I think they're ones that can be just tidied up without me having to put every single amendment. But I did have a couple that I wanted to just highlight. On page 52 of the tracked change policy, at 5.2, where it says council will regularly review and maintain a communications and engagement framework and develop annual priority action plan, because as you see, we've got annual ones there. We've got the first one there. So just to clarify that we'd be expecting an annual priority action plan. And I guess Dr. Stevenson is nodding, so I'm guessing we don't need to do it by a formal amendment, but just that, yep, that can be changed. The other one was that on page 53, section 6.3. Now I've lost my own place. Hang on, and my cat has gone off banana right now.
So now I'm distracted by her. Sorry, I'm just trying to find it. 6.3. No, sorry, hang on, I'm in the wrong. I know what I want. I had it marked.
I've also got one, Mayor, while you look for that. Yep. Input as one word in the on the first page at one point. At 1.6.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, I found it. Sorry, beg your pardon. So,
Councillor Reid, and I think you were trying to, on 6.3, it says how identifies, it should say who identifies. That's just a typo.
Yep. No, there was another one, though. I just wanted to broaden the 6.3 where it says consideration will be, the last sentence says consideration will be given to existing reference groups and or advisory committees currently working with council. I just wanted to broaden that to after council add the words and ratepayer and community groups within the municipality, because we need to reflect that not all of our community associations are, you know, advisory groups of council, but that they should also be obviously engaged with during those processes. So if we could add those words, so it's just so after council and ratepayer and community groups within the municipality. There's a couple of other sort of grammatical ones, but given the lateness of the evening, I will not speak to point them all out individually, but we'll be happy to pass them on to Dr. Stevenson and make sure that a final copy is circulated to all councillors if that's acceptable. Okay, so I'm going to put the motion now, and I once again forgot to write down who the mover and seconder was. I think it was moved by Councillor Cordova and it was seconded by Councillor Gladewright. Yep. Thank you. I'll put the recommendation as printed on page 49. All those in favour, please raise your hands. Councillor Midgley, thank you very much. So we've got Councillors Fox, Cordova, Gladewright, Bastone, Midgley. Councillor Street, are you voting for this? Yep. Councillor Street and Councillor Reid. So the motion is carried unanimously. We turn now to page 82. That's a nice jump forward. Notices, which notice has been given? There were no notices of motion. Still on page 82, I'm looking for a mover and a seconder of confirmation of items to be dealt with in closed session, confirmation of minutes and applications for leave of absence. Moved Councillor Gladewright, seconded Councillor Cordova because he's smiling, so he gets to second it. All those in favour? All right. Against, motion is carried unanimously. In accordance with Kingborough Council meetings audio recording guidelines policy, recording of the open session of the meeting will now cease. Thank you very much to all of those people who have, perhaps if you managed to stay with us for 3 hours and 58 minutes and 32 seconds according to the timer, we greatly appreciate that. We apologise for our technical difficulties that we did have earlier in the meeting, and we thank you and good night.